Portfolio Committee on Police. Also, a word of welcome to the National Commissioner on Police, General Sithole, and his management team. Also, welcome to Statistics South Africa's delegation. Also, welcome to the Secretariat of Police, Mr. Apia and his team. And also to Dr. Andrew Fall, Ms. Anine Krichler, and Mr. Dali Weyers from their respective institutions who also give input today. Honourable members, today, of course, we focus on the Stats SA, not Stats SA, but the statistics of the South African Police Service in terms of the crime patterns for the previous financial year. As we always do, we have a post-announcement review where we invite civil society as well as other role players to give their input so that we can ascertain what is actually happening in the country, what is the crime trends, what can be done to improve responses and also to plan for the future and also look at the validity, any challenges with regard to the correlation of those statistics and also looking at the crime victim survey as another indicator of what's happening in terms with relation to crime trends. So it's important exercise, and we appreciate your attendance today. In terms of our approach, we will also will give the relevant role players opportunity for input. We will, in the end, give an opportunity to the National Commissioner to respond, and of course, then members to interact. I'm going to first give an opportunity to for members to introduce themselves, and then also the relevant delegations. And then there's three matters in the public domain I just want to deal with, and I also give members an opportunity to respond to that. So I'll give an opportunity to members to introduce themselves, then we'll go to South African Police Service, Stats SA, and the Civilian Secretariat.
Goedemorgen, dames en heren. Mijn naam is Angie Mulebati. Ik is een lid van hierdie committee. Ik dank u.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Phindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. I thank you.
Hello, I'm Diane Kohler-Barnard, also a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Zakhele Bele, committee member.
Moloni manene nan manenegas, ndingulenat, lungula lo committee.
Good morning, I'm Jerome Marke, a member of this committee.
Thank you, Honourable Members. General Sithole, National Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen. Chair, the SAPS delegation is as follows. They will make indications as they call them. Lieutenant General Masemula, Deputy National Commissioner Policing. Lieutenant General Sempe, Provincial Commissioner Free State. Lieutenant General Zuma, Provincial Commissioner Mpumalanga. Lieutenant General Jacobs, Divisional Commissioner Crime Intelligence. Lieutenant General Jafta, Divisional Commissioner Visible Policing. Major General Linda, Detective Services. Major General Sikukune, Head Crime Research. Brigadier Mitchell, Head Strategic Management. Brigadier Swar, Provincial Head Crime Registrar. Brigadier MJ Mahlangu, Crime Registrar. Brigadier Manamela, Crime Registrar. Kennel Watermeyer, Crime Registrar. Kennel KP Steyn, Parliamentary Services. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, General Sithole. Stats SA.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member, ladies and gentlemen. From Statistics, my name is Gwen Nesuenya, standing for the Statistician General Rutenga Maluleke, and I'm responsible for social population and social statistics in Statistics South Africa. I'm with Dr. Isabel Smith, Chief Director, Social Statistics, and Mr. Sunnyboy Mantate, responsible for victims of crime survey. We will be joined by Chief Director Demography, responsible for media population estimates. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Secretary of Police.
Good Good morning, Honorable Chair. Thank you, and Honorable Members. My name is Alvin Kumuzarafea, Secretary for Police. With me, I have Ms. Bilkis Omar, who will be doing the presentation on our behalf. I've got Takalani Ramaru, who is the Chief Director, Monitoring and Evaluation. I've got Mr. Dumelo Konjwana, who is our Chief Financial Officer. Ms. Martha Mulepo, who is our Director Research. I've got Mr. Sam Mahote, who is our Parliament Liaison Officer, and Mr. Pumuzo Madzivandira, who is one of the MNE Deputy Directors. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Rapia. Dr. Paul.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Members of the South African Police Service. I'm Andrew Fall from the Justice and Violence Prevention Program at the Institute for Security Studies. I'd also like to acknowledge the Chair, Yatsi Siliers, also of the Institute for Security Studies.
Thank you very much. Ms. Krichler, UCT.
Good morning, everyone. Anine Kushler, Centre of Criminology, University of Cape Town.
Thank you very much. Mr. Weiss.
Good morning. Yes, my name is Ali Weiss. I'm the co-head of programs at the Social Justice Coalition.
Thank you very much. Members, for indicating your origin. Then, members, I just want to come to the three issues in the public domain. On one issue, I also want input from Mr. Apia, the Secretary of the Civilian Secretariat, and of course members will also be given an opportunity. The first issue, I just want to react to the gunning down of a police captain yesterday in New Brighton, Port Elizabeth. We want to express our outrage at this incident, and we want to express our condolences with the South African Police Service and the next of kin of the fallen official. And we also want to call on the national management of SAPS to continue to prioritize the safety of operational members. And this brazen attack by criminals on law enforcement officials highlights the danger that SAPS members face every day in the execution of their duties. Therefore, all the necessary resources should be mobilized to apprehend the perpetrators. Now, we've also seen honorable members in recent days, and this committee has received a number of submissions from members of the public with relation to a dated departmental draft of the Civilian Secretariat with relation to the Firearms Amendment Bill. Now, I must reiterate that, and we'll also give the opportunity to Mr. Rapia, that that document has got no legal standing, and it's unfortunate that some role players created the impression that there's an official document that's currently with Parliament. I just want to indicate that this false narrative has led to the fueling of unwarranted fears and emotions that could have been avoided. We want to just place it on record that there's no official referral from the executive before this committee. And we really want to reiterate to role players and firearm owners that they should await the official tabling of the relevant legislation once it's finalized by the executive. Then just finally on the VBS Mutual Bank matter, we just want to indicate again that the management of the DPCI should ensure that the necessary resources is availed to strengthen the investigations. We acknowledge that there's high expectations from various sectors in society that law enforcement agencies should deal effectively with white-collar crime. I just want to also indicate that the committee will receive in the third week of November an update on high-profile cases from the Hawks. I will just give an opportunity to Mr. Rapia on the one issue, and then I'll give an opportunity to members. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The leaking of the draft document, the draft amendment bill to the Firearms Control Amendment Act, it's really something that it's unfortunate, and we don't believe it's a good thing that that issue has been done. The document that has been leaked is also dated 2017. Our process when we do legislation drafting, we start internally in government. There's a process which we go through internally in government, and we engage on the drafting process. And once that process is done, we go through to cabinet, and cabinet then will approve that the draft bill that is there goes for public publication. And then it goes back to cabinet before it comes to parliament, after we get public comments. And then cabinet then that will say, submit this for the parliamentary process. So the document that has been put on social media, it's still discussion. I can even indicate here that we had a min-mac last week, because the process of consultation within government hasn't completed. We had to present the draft, the new draft to MINMEC. So we are still discussing this thing internally. So that is not an official document. It's still being discussed. And at the right time, when cabinet has approved the draft amendment bill, it will be published, and the interested parties will actually have an opportunity to comment. It's not right to whip emotions of people when we are dealing with the issue of crime, and we go out there and create an impression that the government doesn't care. Thank you, Shepherdson.
Thank you, Mr. Rafia. I will now give an opportunity to honourable members to comment. Honourable Kalubana, Honourable Mbele, Honourable Ramatlakane.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by the response from the Civilian Secretariat. It's not right to stir up public outrage. The point is the document created by the Civilian Secretariat has stirred up public outrage. I think it's a very good thing that someone leaked it so that the populace knows that either the Civilian Secretariat wishes to take away our right to self-defense or the right to defend others, or are being instructed by someone else to put that in as an amendment. And saying that a document drawn up last year, when we know that legislation takes years and years and years and years to put together, is really not an acceptable answer. I mean, it has caused absolute outrage. People are being tortured to death in their homes, and here's the Civilian Secretariat proposing that actually South Africans don't have the right to defend themselves. Let's just take that away. Let's just disarm everybody so you can just sit in your homes, and when they've got through your dogs and your beams and every security you can be slaughtered and just say, well, they won't let me defend myself.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Yes, just a moment. Honourable Kalubana, Honourable Markey.
Are we discussing a leaked document here? The contents of that leaked document, because seemingly that is what my colleague is doing now.
Yeah, members, let's deal with the issues at hand. You can continue.
Yeah, the document is out there, and that is what we are discussing. So I think it is very good that it was leaked, that we now know what you are doing and what you're drawing up and what you're proposing and what will be discussed in Cabinet. And frankly, to once again talk...
You haven't ruled on what I said. I said my colleague is out of order.
Oh.
We are not discussing the content of the document.
Ah.
Your Honourable, I mean, at this point in time, that is my understanding.
Your Honourable Markey, remember that the document is in the public domain, but I mean, what we want to deal with is to indicate clearly that there is no document before this committee in terms of amendment to the Firearms Bill. There's nothing before us, and I mean, that is the That's what has been created on the social media by some of the role players. That's why we received a lot of correspondence over the last few days. So that is really the discussion. So if members can just deal with that. Thank you.
If I may continue, I think as a committee we know the document has not come to us, but it is extremely enlightening to know that the people who draw up the legislation that will come before us, that will go to cabinet, have put in and taken away the right to self-defense. So that if they imagine no one's going to bother until it comes to this committee, you are wrong. And really, to do this to the law-abiding firearm owners who go through all the hoops to get a license when the criminals just shoot their way to wealth in this country is absolutely outrageous, and I, for one, am utterly disgusted.
Honourable Bailey, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And I think I would echo the sentiments you've expressed, certainly concerning the shooting and killing of the police officer. I think my comments is just to focus on what I see to be the common thread in all three matters you've raised in the public domain, and indeed the subject matter of this committee meeting, which is the utter and unmitigated sense of impunity with which criminality rages in this country. The brazenness with which the police officer was killed, as has been the case in other police killings, says to us what criminals think and know, quite frankly, they can get away with, to strike at the very the very law enforcement officers that are meant to strike fear in their hearts, not vice versa. Similarly, with the VBS matter, there's already a sense of outrage about the impunity with which it's been carried out, and the big question is whether all role players, both administrative and political, who no doubt would have applied pressure for that kind of thing to happen, are going to face consequences for their roles in that criminality. And that is why when a provision in a, albeit draft, but nonetheless a document from a government department suggests a fundamental legislative reform to negate the right to self-defense when it comes to firearms, to firearm ownership, will catalyze and whip up the public fear and backlash that it has. And to tie all of that up, when we look at the crime stats we're going to be analyzing today, we see low detection rates, low conviction rates, and so criminals simply know that they can't get away with it. Crime, in fact, does pay, and that's the issue that this all boils and distills down to, is to fix those fundamentals in the SAPs, to make them effective, efficient, professional, responsive, so that we start having a much stronger deterrence effect, and we actually start turning the tide to make sure that criminals do not only feel, but know with great confidence that they can get away with perpetrating those violations. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Ramalakani.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair, and just a comment as well from my side. The first one is that we should express our condolences to the family of many thousands of South Africans who are, in fact, killed by criminals, including especially for the police that have been every day faced with this kind of an attack. I do want to say, I think, Chair, that it must be, in fact, the police must pull all stops to arrest those perpetrators that are continuing to visit that kind of horrendous crime to our men and women in blue who are supposed to defend our democracy, who are actually defenders of our people. and must say that the those that are visiting or they are embarking on such a crime against the police must be seen, always seen, as an attack against the state. And I think they must be dealt with harshly by the law enforcement agency, but more importantly by courts. I think there has to be some discussion because for the deterrent of this kind of crime to happen, there must be some conviction. There must be some serious conviction that send that message to those who are embarking on this. So it means, therefore, that some of our discussion, Chair, into time to come, we should have a discussion with another portfolio committee, particularly of justice. How do we get fast-track this kind of crime, criminal that are embarked on this particular crime, that they don't stand in a long queue of a role, because it must be understood as a particular crime, as I say, for me, it is an attack against the state. If the police is wearing a uniform, they do that. They, in fact, use the firearm to kill the police like that. It should be treated as such. On another matter, Chair, the matter of the BBS issue, I want to agree. There was a debate yesterday. And I think we should say that when it comes to us, but we can't wait for it when it comes to us. We should be saying that the police, the law enforcement agency, should deal with that matter when crime is committed of such a magnitude, basically of a kind of looting, because there's no other description you can put to it. The police will have to deal with it, the law enforcement agency deal with that particular aspect. The last point, Chair, on this document, a so-called leaked document. I do want to say that I think our job here, we make laws, and nobody makes laws on our behalf. We are the one who makes the law. As we sit here in this committee, there is no law that we are considering that purport to be take the rights of a South African from owning a gun. So anything out of that will be further from the truth. We make the law. We have not started that process. Whatever document is being discussed, it must never be seen as official document that has that particular view. And in fact, I don't know whether we would agree with that document, with that particular, because there's some rights that are there, even though there are limitations on the rights, but I don't think that that's a line that we're going to be taking. So I think it will be disingenuous that we take that line. Obviously, we're having the election in front of us in the next year. So we may find that there are certain things that we use as a mobilization tool towards the election. This one may be one of them. And I think that let's just say to South Africans that we are not embarking on such a process. We will, when that happens, we will engage with them about the process of lawmaking as a normal process. Anything from that is just emotion, whipping up emotion. We should be treated as such. That will be my point in terms of this issue. So there is no such a thing on the table. It is not on the table. If it won't be on the table, we'll deal with it. In the foreseeable future, we don't have that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mbatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to say, we are satisfied with the explanation that we got from the Secretariat. And to say we know there is nothing that we are discussing regarding the firearm amendment. And we are not going to talk about a document that came in through the window. We are going to wait for the right time when there's a document in front of us, a proper one, and then we can engage. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, members. Is Honourable Markey, you covered?
Yeah, I hope so.
Thank you. Thank you very much, honorable members, for your input. It's appreciated. Let's start with the business of the day. We will first start with the Civilian Secretariat, their analysis of the crime statistics, and they will be followed by Statistics South Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Morning, honorable chair, honorable members. So today I will be presenting you an analysis of the crime stat for 2017-18. It's the Civilian Secretariat perspective, which is a very interventionist perspective.
Maybe just closer to the microphone, otherwise you're not going to be audible at all. The members there, the fact can't hear.
Okay, in terms of the presentation overview, I just sit down. Thank you. In terms of the presentation overview, something's happened to the slide and my heading's gone down, and it's not visible. But in any case, this is an overview slide, so it has an introduction. I will discuss murder as a measure of crime stats, measuring murders at police station level, the relevance of other offences other than murder, SAPS performance measures, petty crimes, the South African National Victims of Crime Survey, and a conclusion and some recommendations. Chair, by way of introduction, as everybody knows, the crime stats were released in September 2018, covering the period April 2017 to March 2018. Crime stats are provided annually in actual figures and in rates per 100,000 of the population. Crime stats are provided for national, provincial, and police station areas. They cover only crimes reported to the police. This is important, it's only reported crimes. And SAPS have which is a good thing, SAPS have over the years, past years, disaggregated the crime stats to crime types. For example, under sexual offences, we have sexual assault, rape, attempted sexual assault. Before, it was all just classified into one. It has been disaggregated over the years, but the only thing is the details of the crimes are not published. So, for example, the geographical information, the demographics, etc., but SAPS does have this. Crime stats are useful to provide historical trends over years and to compare areas to each other. Most importantly, crime stats allow for targeted interventions if details of crimes are made available, and that's the point I'm making, that they're not published. And the Civilian Secretariat has a mandate to advise the Minister of Police in how to deal with the crime problem. In terms of murder as a measure of crime stats, Chair, we're arguing that key to understanding crime trends are the murder statistics, and it is the only offence not subject to under-reporting. There's a body for every crime that's reported, for every murder that's reported, rather. So the police crime stats cover only reported crimes, and a large number of crimes go unreported to various reasons, and I'll discuss this later. Murder therefore reflects the general trend in crimes, and it is also closely related to the trends in other violent crimes. The South African Police Service stats for murder in 2017-18 reflects the following. Murders are increasing and have been for a while. That's the murder rate is increasing. Despite a sharp drop in the murder rate since the late 1990s, South African murder rate remains very high by international standards, and there were over 20,000 murders committed, the largest number reported in the last 10 years. Now, Chair, I'd like to talk about measuring murders at police station level. So murder at police station level is provided by SAPS in actual numbers, not in rates. And using the actual numbers results in emphasis being placed on the largest police stations. And when I say largest police station, I'm talking about in terms of the number of people living in a policing precinct, rather than on those stations where the people are less secure or people feel vulnerable. And that's the argument between rates and raw numbers. So the table below reflects the SAPS top 30 largest police station as extracted from the latest SAPS crime stat. The point of this, I'm not moving the slide. The point of this slide is basically show that the top murder police stations in the country. And I'll come back to this a bit later. The next slide, Chair, talked to measuring murders at police station level. So when comparing stations, it is important to use murder rates because safety issues of communities need to be reflected rather than the size of the population. I've made this point before. So instead of counting the number of people living in a police precinct, we're saying rather look at murder rates, because then you prioritize safety of people and their feelings of vulnerability. For this reason, it is important to understand how crime rates are measured at police station level. Crime rates are calculated based on the 2011 population figures of Stats SA and not the current population, because there is no new current population. I believe there's a new census going to be done in 2021. Chair, the next sub-bullet point, I've said that SAPS uses the 2011 population data because it is the only population figures available at sufficiently detailed geographical level. I've been told otherwise, that actually SAPS uses 2011 population data, but there's a percentage increase on a year-on-year basis. So that's slightly untrue point. The table below then reflects the 10 areas with the highest murder rates and the actual figures. And this table demonstrates that several of the police stations where crime is at issue are actually small police stations. So I made the point about large police stations that are prioritized because of the actual murder numbers or crime numbers. This table here basically shows, and I'm looking at the bottom figure of Philippi East as an example. The population of Philippi East is 56,072, and if you look at the actual figures, it says 205 murders in Philippi. But if you work it as a murder rate per 100,000 of the population, it's actually 366. So if the place had 100,000 people, then the murders would have been 366 in that area and not 205. So the point is that you use rates, you get a better comparison over population areas, and your interventions can then be focused in the correct areas. The next slide talks to relevance of other offences, Chair. Unlike murder, other crimes recorded by the police are subject to a great deal of error because they depend on reporting rates. For example, sexual offences, are not all cases are not reported, and they depend directly on police action, for example, drug-related offences. So the point here is that not all crimes are reported to the police, and yes, the police are still depending on all crimes. It is difficult to tell whether the reported changes are due to a change in the actual number of offences, to differences in reporting rate, or to the differences in the level of police actions. Due to this uncertainty, it should not be inferred that an increase in the number of offences is necessarily a bad thing. So we're arguing, that if there is an increase in offences, it's not necessarily the fault of the police or a bad thing. And the example I'm using is that if there's an increase in sexual offences or rape, that it means that the people have confidence in the criminal justice system and or the police, and hence they're reporting. And Chair, we've developed a policy in this regard. It's called the policy on reducing barriers to reporting on sexual offences and domestic violence. And we argue in that policy that if sexual offences, domestic violence go up, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing because people have faith in the police and they're reporting the crimes. In terms of the next slide, we talk about performance measures. As per the above, the murder rate remains the most reliable indicator of crime trends. In the past, the number of violent offences that were reported in a police station was used as a measure of that station's performance. Actually, I think it's still on. But the point here is that SAPS is not responsible for all crimes. So this has an impact of holding SAPS to account for things they don't have control over, and this includes the socio-economic issues that are contributors to crimes, for example, unemployment rates, inequality, children growing up without father figures, public areas not designed to be safe, and other socio-economic factors. So it can't always be the responsibility of police or crime can't be the responsibility of police preventing crime, rather. So giving the other impact is giving SAPS an incentive not to report or to underreport certain categories of crime, and allowing SAPS to ignore petty offences as these have not entered the reporting domain or the performance indices. Chair, I'd just like to talk about petty crimes. I think because we've concentrated over the years so much on violent crime, and rightly so, that petty crimes have been neglected over the years. And while bylaw enforcement is still the role of municipal police service, rather, it is still also the responsibility of SAPS. So what we're arguing here is that one of the areas that has not been given much consideration because of the prominence given to violent offences is petty offences. Policing of petty offences in part to de-escalate offences committed by youth, in particular in the early stages of antisocial behaviour. So the more we neglect youth involved in crime, the more they're going to escalate into larger offences later on. So let's also focus on petty offences while we can. We're saying that maybe we need a performance indicator in order to deal with petty offences. And some of the examples of petty crimes would be exposing yourself in public, drinking in public, graffiti, urinating in public. And I know most of them are still by law enforcement related to Metro Police. But I think the SAPs have a role to play in it as well. In terms of the South African National Victims of Crime Survey, I just have one slide because I know stats they say easier to talk to this. The recently released Victims of Crime Survey show that perceptions of South Africans on crime in 2017-18 were more skeptical compared to the previous year. An estimated 79% of South Africans felt safe walking alone in the neighborhood during the day, a decrease of 6.7% from the previous year. About 32% of South Africans felt safe walking alone in their neighborhoods at night, an increase of 8% from last year. The percentage of South Africans who were dissatisfied with the police responses in 2017-18 was 54%, and this is a decrease of 5.5% from the previous year. The most common, that's 34.4%, reason for dissatisfaction with the police was that they don't respond in time. The most common reason in 2016-17 was that they don't recover goods. Chair, in conclusion, the ABA suggests that SAPS should not conduct business as usual. Next week we have been invited by the committee to talk on the state of policing report, and we'll elaborate more on this. So we think changing this requires modifying the way in which their performance is measured, and the Civilian Secretariat is drafting guidelines on SAPS performance indicators in this financial year. We're also saying modifying the way in which resources are allocated. We're saying focus on the murder rate station areas, restructuring the interaction with communities and other organs of state like local government. And here we're talking about the issue of trust in the police and how we can better or improve the engagement with the community and becoming an organization that values professionalism. In terms of recommendations, we're saying SAPS must win the trust of communities. SAPS performance must be measured in a more targeted manner. For example, SAPS station performance must not be measured by crimes which have varying reporting rates. Rather use murder. SAPS has to be steered in the direction of using its resources more efficiently. Currently, the number of violent offences and the population figures influence resource allocation to stations. The alternative, which is using murder as a primary measure for resource allocation, is murdered. It must be understood that SAPS alone cannot deal with the crime issues, as safety is an integrated approach which involves the whole of government and the whole of society. And we proposed this in the 2016 YF paper on safety and security. And the last recommendation is that SAPS, the Civilian Secretariat has produced policies and research which deal with the above issues, and we're suggesting that we need to work together with SAPS to look at these. And we've got the white paper on policing that talks of demilitarization and professionalization. I mentioned the white paper on safety and security. We have research on demilitarization. We've looked at the tactical response team, public order unit, and visible policing. We have the police resource allocation research project and the state of policing report. All these reports and policies, Chair, have a lot of recommendations that we can sit with SAPS and assist with and looking at how to reduce crime in the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Umar. Let's then go to Stats SA for their presentation. Thank you.
If you don't mind. Yeah, I would just have to put that in here.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you this morning. Can I?
Yeah, you can.
Maybe I can just page down when I need to. We are here to present to you the findings of the Victims of Crime Survey, which was released on the 11th of October. I'm going to give a brief overview and introduction about the survey, and then I'm going to hand over to Mr. Mantata, who will go into more details about the findings of this particular year. I think I'm not going to go into great detail as to why do we need crime statistics. I think everybody in this room are very aware of the reasons for that. In addition to people's feelings of safety, we also have several provisions, national development plan, medium-term strategic framework, etc., which directly talks to feelings of safety of the South African public. This is not that.
Maybe they can follow the hard copy. Okay. Right. Seems we've got a technical problem. I just want to know, Secretary, did we distribute the hard copies?
Yes.
Right, so members got that. So hopefully, meanwhile, the Technology Division of Parliament will come and assist. But let's continue. Thank you.
Okay, so Statistics South Africa consider this a very, very important collection because whilst the police administrative data focuses on reported crimes, the Victims of Crime Survey actually goes to households and asks them about the experience of victimization as well as the attitudes towards the law enforcement agencies responsible for the crime and safety of our households. So the specific survey was first done in 1998 by Stats SA, and after that the repeat survey was done in 2003 and 2007 by the Institute of Security Studies. All three of those surveys had very small sample sizes, and since 2011 Stats SA has been doing this survey with our standard master sample design of 30,000 households that are statistically representative of the population of South Africa. The main objectives of this survey is to really look at experience of victimization as well as the public's attitude related to various aspects of crime. So what we are presenting to you today is still the traditional Victims of Crime survey, although it looks quite different from the first years of publication. Initially, we focused on providing a lot of detail on people's attitudes about crime and also their experiences. But since last year, we started publishing comparisons, direct comparisons between the victimization rates picked up in the Victims of Crime survey and the victimization rates of the administrative crime reporting system. And this is a direct consequence of a visit that we did in 2010 to the UK, where we specifically looked at how they are handling their crime reporting. And at that point, the Home Affairs, equivalent to our Home Affairs Department, were actually reporting in one document both the crime statistics of the police as well as that measured through the victimization survey. So we set that as a medium-term goal for us. And I think the publication that we are presenting to you today is actually where we were heading to all along, where we actually have those two crime stats jointly in one release. So the next change that we are proposing to do is, as of next year, we will not be publishing the traditional Victims of Crime survey anymore. We'll be doing the Governance, Public Safety and Justice survey. We are already collecting on that survey, and with your permission, at the end of the presentation of the Victims of Crime Survey findings, I'll share with you four slides that will just explain to you what is the difference between the Victims of Crime Survey and the Governance, Public Safety and Justice Survey. So I think on your packs, on your presentation, we can perhaps just go to, yes, we are now seeing the, but as soon as you move, it goes off. Oh, I shouldn't move. This is actually not the presentation, it's another one. What's this one? Yeah. Now, so we are okay. I've talked to this before, but these are the basic objectives of the survey: to explore the views of households and crime victims about crime, public perceptions about the activities of the police, prosecutors, courts, and correctional services. And then what is very important is to provide complementary data on the level of crime in South Africa. Okay, so it's not changing here, but it's changing there. It's fine. Okay, so for the purposes of this presentation, I think it's important for you to know two things. We measure what we call household crimes, and we measure individual crimes. Household crimes are typically crimes that are that affect the whole household, and that could be reported on by any proxy member of the household. For example, a housebreaking or a home robbery, which affected the household in its entirety. Then we also have what we call individual crimes in this survey, and those are surveys that happen to individuals. For example, someone is a victim of a street robbery. And typically for those, we only rely on the response of the specific individual. So we randomly select one individual age 16 and older from the household who talk to us about their individual experiences of victimization. So what we found in the most recent Victims of Crime survey, when we look at the general experience of household crime, that it was increased by 5% over the reporting period. And the total number of crime incidences that we picked up at a household level was 1.5 million. The estimated number of households that experienced households that we, crime that we classify as household crime was 1.2 million households. And the percentage of households that experienced at least one crime was 7.5% of South African households. Then when we look at individual crimes, estimated total number of crime incidences is 1.7 million. Estimated number of victimized individuals aged 16 and above is 1.4 million. And then 3.7% of individuals in South Africa were victims of some sort of a crime on the list that we measured in that financial year. And it's increased by 0.2 percentage points. I think when we look at household and individual crimes on this particular slide, we show increases and decreases from the previous year. You'll notice that the greenish bars represent household crimes and the bluish bars individual crimes. And what comes immediately to the fore is that Free State and Northwest have experienced exceptional increases in both these crime categories, whereas we saw some decreases in Western Cape, Northern Cape, and the Eastern Cape. Overall in South Africa, as I indicated, it has gone up by approximately 5%. So I'm going to now hand over to my colleague, Mr. Mantata. It actually doesn't want to go down now.
You can just talk, because they've got the slide.
Yeah. So, Sonny Boy, maybe just sit where you are, and then we speak to the handout.
Thank you very much. You're welcome. Thank you.
For the opportunity of giving you the picture of Vox Victims of Crime Survey over the period 2015 2013-14 till grand financial period 2017-18. I'm going to give details on the household crime experience by the household crime experience. It's very important that in some of the crime, I'll explain how we got those indicators in terms of bringing you back to the questions that were asked to the respondent. And the other point is very important that when we compare such crime, some of the definitions that we compare with SAPS are not aligned the way they should be. Like, for an example, street robbery. We are comparing it with robbery with aggravating circumstances where it includes hijacking, but for victims of crime, it's just a pure street robbery. So that must be taken into consideration. When we look at the next graph, you can slide, please. Yes.
It's not projected.
Okay. Everybody between the years 2013 and 2016 and 2017, we saw a decline in the trend of percentage of in South Africa that experienced at least one incident of crime. Here we only looked at one, even though we know there will be multiple. We just chose one incident of crime. However, we saw an increase this year of about 0.3% between 2016 and 2017. And from those crimes that were experienced by household, over the past 5 years, we have seen housebreaking. It came up tops at more than 50% for the past financial years. And that was followed by home robbery. The other important thing that to note about these two crimes that are interchangeably used is the issue of definition of housebreaking and home robbery. In vernacular, how do you distinguish between the two? So that is why we find that always home robbery follows housebreaking. Then when we look at the other crime types that has increased over the years, we see that motor vehicle vandalism have increased over the period 2017-18 with about 26%. And this is followed by theft of motor vehicles. Even though housebreaking and burglary was 54%, when you look at highest percentage increase, it only accounted for about 7%, which shows that this even though it increased at a slow pace, but it's the most experienced crime. And when we look at the crime that decreases the most is the theft of crops. And for this one, when we look at the theft of crops, we must look at the issue of these are the crops that are planted by the household. It doesn't include commercial crops that the farmers report. So it's just the theft that the crops that are planted by the household. So we had a low response when it comes to responses on the theft of crops. Moving further, we're looking at the incidence of housebreaking over the same period, 2013-14 and 2016-17. There were about 832,000 incidents of housebreaking, which shows an increase of about 7%. And about 4.25% of households experienced burglary, which is about half percentage point increase. And when we look at the number of victims who reported housebreaking and burglary, more than half, 51% of victims, they reported this housebreaking and burglary to the police. Now we further ask in the survey, what were the items that were lost during housebreaking and burglary? In this year, we found that clothes were the most common items that were stolen during housebreaking and burglary, whereas cell phones and foodstuff accounted for about a quarter of the items that were stolen. And what is surprising with our figures is the issue of money. When we look at money, with about 20.4%. Followed by personal effects such as watches, jewelry, wedding rings. It accounted for about 17.6%. Now, household were asked a question. Did you report this housebreaking incident to the police? And those who answered yes, we further asked them, were you satisfied with the police response to the housebreaking incident that happened to you? About 33% of households that reported housebreaking to the police, they indicated that they were satisfied with the police. Equally, male and female headed households were equally likely to be satisfied with the police. But when we come to population group, white population group had the highest percentage of about 53% of households that are satisfied with police response to housebreaking reporting. When we come to other population groups, black African and colored population groups, they had the lowest percentage of households that were satisfied with police response. Then when we look at the provincial pictures, Northern Cape had the highest percentage of households that were satisfied with police response to housebreaking. And we're looking at the predominantly metropolitan provinces. They are below national average. Provinces like Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, the only province within the metros that were satisfied with the police response was the Western Cape, with about 38%. Moving to home robbery. This type of crime, it has decreased rapidly, decreased between the same period of 5 years. So this one was now where we compare with subs-reported cases that is slightly increased between the period 2013-2016-17. For the past financial year, there was about 156,089 incidents of home robbery, which is an increase of about 3%. Only 8% of households experienced that housebreaking. 59% of those victims of home robbery, they indicated that they reported this crime to the police. One important factor that we should know is that most often this home robbery, they involve alteration with the perpetrator. There's a perpetrator that is involved. In some of them, they are violent. That is why you find that about 59% of the household they report as compared to the ones of housebreaking. So when we look at the number of incidents of theft of livestock, poultry, and other animals, it declined over the same period of 2013-14 till 2017-18. There were about 159,000 incidences with a decline of about 1%. And when we look what is the contribution in terms of the percentage of household, it accounted to 0.77, which is about 0.04 percentage point increase. About 29% of theft of livestock victims, they indicated that they reported it to the police. The next crime that we look at is the issue of murder. So when we compared with subs, we added the issue of culpable homicide to that. For victims of crime survey, we were asking only, has your household experienced murder in the past 12 months? So in order to have a better comparison, we had to add culpable homicide that subs reported on. There were about 16,000 murder incidences, with an increase of about 4%, and about 0.08% of households that experienced murder. And what is very important is to know that 89% of households indicated that they reported murder to the police. There are other murders that were detected by the police as a result that households might not even know about. Some member of the household passed on somewhere and the police, they just tell them. They didn't have to report, but they were notified of the murder. So that is why when we check on the murder, we find that our reporting to the police is about 89%. And the next crime types that we're gonna discuss is the individual crime. Here we got into the household and we selected a random person that is age 16 years and above. So from this selected person, we were able to ask them the questions that relate to the crime that affect them personally. And it's very important to know that the total number of individuals in the individual crime and the number that is in the household section might not be equal, because there were instances where the selected person was not found in the survey. So when we look at the percentage of individuals aged 16 years and above who experienced crime, we see a decrease steadily between 2013 and 2016-17. And there was a slight increase between the financial years 2016-17 and 2017-18. Now, when we look at what crime types affected the individual the most, we've seen that theft of personal property, assault, and robbery accounted for about 79% of those of crime that are experienced by the individuals. Then we further wanted to know what are those items that were stolen. So many people, many respondents indicated that about 69% of them indicated that their cell phones were the most common items that were lost through the theft of personal property, followed by money purse or wallet, and bank cards and books. But when you look at the theft of personal property, there were about 693,000 incidents, which is a drop of about 2%. And about 1.72% of individuals experience this theft of personal property, which is an increase of about 0.04 percentage point. And about 24% of those individuals, they reported this crime to the police, which is a decline of about 8% percentage point. Then when we look at the robbery outside home, the one that I spoke about, that I compared with the subs robbery with aggravating circumstances. When we look at that, there were about 280,000 incidents of robbery outside home. So this can be robbery in the malls, robbery in the street, robbery that is not necessarily in the household. We saw a decline of about 5%, and about 0.6% of percentage of individuals experienced this particular crime type, which is a decline of about 0.04 percentage point. And also we see about 36% of these individuals, they reported this crime to the police. And one of the things that we should note is that among this, the type of weapon that was used commonly when we come into this type of crime, knife came up tops with about 71%. And this was followed by a gun with 34%. So when we do a quick glance about robbery away from home, we found that about 65.4% of victims were robbed in the street in the residential area, because we were asking, where did the incident happen? So most of the respondents, they gave us that it happens in the street in the residential area. Males were almost likely twice as likely to be victims of robbery in the street as compared to females. 31.5% of those victims, they resisted robbery, and 25.8% of them were injured during the robbery. There's evidence of association of resisting robbery and sustaining injury during robbery, and this is seen by the type of weapons that were used. And when we compare this particular crime, both SAPS and Vox estimates show the declining trend of assault. So this, now we look at the assault. So there were about 355,000 cases of assault, which about 12% increase. Only 0.72% of individuals were affected by the assault, which is an increase of about 0.01 percentage point. Only 47% of victims of assault reported this crime to the police. Number of incidents about this, they accounted for about 355. Males were more likely to be victims of assault than females. Females were more likely to report assault to the police than males. And we have observed in the survey that most assaults occur at home, because we asked the question further, where did the incident take place? Most respondents, they indicated that the incident happened at home. So now, the next question that we had is about household feelings about crime and their safety. This is a perception. It's not necessary experience. We are asking household about their perceptions about crime. So when we were asking this question, we were asking household, what is the level of crime in your neighborhood? And we have seen that the response that was expected, therefore, was whether the crime increased, decreased, or stayed the same over the same period. We have seen an increase of households that indicated that the violent crime has increased in their area. And we can see that increase from 32.5 to 42.1 in this financial year. Conversely, when we look at those who indicated the decrease, We see that from 2012 there was 38.2%. Now that figure, where people were feeling that crime is decreasing in their neighborhood, is going down. That means there are fewer people now who feel that crime is decreasing in their area. Then those who believe that crime stayed the same over the same period, we see that when we compare with 2012, we see that this year it was about 28.6. And we must remember that when we were asking this question, we were asking in their neighborhood where they stay. Then the other question we were asking about households that were feeling safe when walking day and night in their neighborhood. And this is a very important indicator that will fit into the NDP and MTSF, where we say South Africans are and feel safe. Then when we look at this indicator, we were checking the number of South Africans that feel safe during the day. We are seeing the decline from 87% to 79% this financial year. And when we see those who are feeling safe when it's dark, we also see the number declining also from 35% in 2013-14 to 32%. Now, further, the household were asked about their satisfaction with the police and courts. There is a widening gulf in household satisfaction between the police service and how courts generally deal with the perpetrators of crime. We have seen over the figures of 2013-14 till 2017-18 that households are not satisfied with the police and courts. But courts, they have moved from the period from 63.9% to 41.1% this financial year. The same trend can be seen when we look at the household satisfaction with the police. Then when we see provincial distribution of satisfaction levels with the police and courts, that in general, we see that Northern Cape showed a large decline in both satisfaction of levels with police and courts. In all the provinces, we see a decline in the number of households that are not satisfied with the police or courts. So when we are comparing them in this financial year, Limpopo is the only province that show higher satisfaction rate with the court visits police, with about 58% of households in Limpopo that are satisfied with the police and 64% that are satisfied with the courts. Northwest is the least, is the province with the least satisfaction, with about 44% and 47%. Now we were asking households about the effectiveness of correctional service. So the question here that we asked to the household was, would you like to do the following? Will you provide the employment to a former prisoner, or will you marry a former prisoner? We have seen that about more than half of males, they agreed that they will marry a former prisoner. They will provide employment to a former prisoner as compared to females. So when we check at marrying a former prisoner, males were also 25% of males indicated that they will marry a former prisoner as compared to 19% of females. And when we look at population group, looking at the same question, we've seen that about 51.6 of black Africans, they said they will employ a former prisoner, and then about 24.6 they indicated they will marry a former prisoner. And we see the same trend following when it comes to other population group, with the whites about 35.5% that they indicated they will employ a former prisoner, and about 12.4 indicating they will marry a former prisoner. So when we look at the general levels of crime, the general level of crime has been declining since last year, and even the feelings of safety is also continuing to decline. When we look at the murder has increased during the past 3 years, both in terms of the total number, in terms of vox and subs. And when we look at the perception of crime, the greater number of households in 2017-18 compared to 2016-17, they think the level of violent crimes has increased during the past 3 years. So Vox was just giving a complementary source of household and individual feelings about the crime pattern in South Africa, what is happening. And it's very important that when we look at this, we also look at in conjunction with the SAPS. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. That was a fascinating presentation. Thank you very much. Yes.
I will very, very briefly just paint the picture of what we are envisaging in the future for the specific statistical product. As I've mentioned earlier, what is new for the, has been new for the last 2 years is that we published the police statistics with our own statistics in one statistical release. That will continue, even though we are changing the Victims of Crime Survey into a governance, public safety and justice survey. I'll give you an overview of how we conceptualize governance statistics, and then you can place the crime statistics within the context of this overview. We see, if we consider governance statistics to be a house, we see the foundations of that house to really be the elements of governance, legitimacy, voice, equity, direction and leadership, government effectiveness and performance, and the rule of law, as well as accountability, transparency, and the control of corruption. So if we are to achieve the goals of the National Development Plan, which is the elimination of all forms of poverty and the reduction of inequality, none of our developmental interventions will come to fruition if our foundations are not solid. And our foundations are the precepts on which our constitutional democracy is founded. So rule of law and accountability, transparency and control of corruption are two of the aspects that we consider part of governance statistics. And so after a long consultative process in which many people around this table have been involved in, we have conceptualized the new survey called Governance, Public Safety and Justice Survey. This survey will be done in a cycle of 3 years. Every year this survey will have a component where we ask households and individuals about the experience of victimization. So the graphs that you saw presented by Mr. Mantata just now, which compares the Victims of Crime Survey crime statistics with that of the police, will still be generated every year. What is different is in year one, we are focusing on people's experiences related to human rights. We are looking at experiences of discrimination. We are also looking at courts, more detail on people's experience when they access justice. And then thirdly, experience of disputes. Experience of disputes really relate to access to justice in its most broadest form. So we will be trying to establish to what extent access to justice is a reality for people outside of the court system. And then the very last one, experience of victimization, will be there every year. In year two, we are focusing on the concept capable state. And we are currently preparing that questionnaire. It will go to field in April 2019. There we ask households about their experiences with the government in terms of government service provision, trust in institutions, and then we are looking at more detail around the issue of corruption, and experience of victimization also appears in the year two questionnaire. In year three, you will have a more traditional victims of crime survey type questionnaire. So Mr. Mantata, at the end of his presentation, gave a lot of detail about people's perceptions about crime, levels of satisfaction of the courts and the police. Those modules will continue to be there in year three. Every third year, we'll have all those details included in our reporting. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to Stats SA. We will like to engage in terms of the questions from member side. We will then ask Dr. Andrew Fall from ISS. Thank you, Dr. Fall.
Yeah. the connection.
No,
problem.
It's not.
It wasn't that I was connected.
No, it's not connecting with us.
There's a problem with the connection. So I have to use it from the slide sheet.
You can continue.
What?
Yeah.
What? So I can't. I should continue without this.
Yeah, I think there was a handout.
I think we're still struggling with the technology issues, but let's continue with the slide that was handed out to members. This document.
Okay. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, thank you very much for inviting the Institute for Security Studies to give our thoughts on the South African Police Service's crime statistics and the victim of survey data. Firstly, due to time limits, I'm obviously going to have to limit my input to particular comments. I would direct you to feedback we provided last year, which provides commentary on many of the flaws in the weaknesses in police data, which I won't repeat today, some of which were raised by Ms. Omar as well. Just to tell you our key messages before I go into some more detail, police crime statistics should be seen as an indicator of societal challenges rather than a measure of pure police performance. For too long we've punished police for fluctuations, we've read lots into fluctuations in crime statistics. They are very important, but they're just one indicator. Limited crime categories should be used as a measure of police performance. As we've already heard, murder is our most important. Others include various types of robbery that are more reliable than others. South Africa is very fortunate to have both excellent SAPS statistics and regular victim of crime data. I think we in civil society and the country at large are very grateful for this fact, particularly the additional detail we've been seeing in police data in recent years, disaggregating by sex, telling us more about the times of day at which crime is taking place, the weapons being used and the like. And we are hugely fortunate to have annual victim data. Having both sets of data is perhaps the easiest way to check crime trends. Where there are correlations between these data sets, we can be fairly confident of their veracity. However, there are additional data that we mustn't forget, and I'll speak a bit more about those later on. We need to look at additional data sources to help us understand crime victimization and violence, particularly where they are most concentrated. There's also a need for police data to be made more readily available in more detail where possible, more regularly, so that partners, communities, and other stakeholders can collaborate with the SAPS to partner in bringing down violence and crime. And finally, we need to take note that the victim surveys have for a while noted an increase in fear of crime and feelings of unsafety. Ultimately, the individual who goes home at night isn't thinking about the latest crime stats that were presented in Parliament in terms of gauging their feeling of safety and confidence. They're going on what they've heard from friends, their personal experiences, and what they know is going on in their community. And we need to keep that in mind. So many of you will be aware of the long decline in murder in South Africa. You'll see it in your presentations. There it is on the screen. We have seen a spectacular decline in murder. We did see one until around 2011. And this is something we repeatedly come back to, but it's because it is our best indicator of violence generally. For everybody that turns up, there are dozens of others that will be injured, maimed, and so forth. And so, although this might not be 100% foolproof measure of murder, it is our best tracker of violence as a whole. So, as Ms. Omar pointed out, this is something we should come back to. We should acknowledge the great decline in violence, and we should be very concerned about the year-on-year increase we've seen for the past 6 years. This is a graph provided by the SAPS during their presentation in Parliament last month. The 17 community reported serious crimes are those that affect most of us, the murders, the assaults, the sexual assaults, the house breakings and the house robberies. And this looks positive. There's a downward trend. It's about a 12% trend over a 10-year period. I think we are right to be skeptical of this, in part because it's a lumping of 17 categories, and we need to look at them individually, which we can do thanks to the SAPS data. But we shouldn't dismiss the downward trend in its totality either. And I say this because of the victim survey. When we look at the victim survey data since 1998 until recently, we have until this most recent survey seen a constant decline in victimization rates. Although the sample was much smaller in 1998, 24.5% of households reported having been a victim of crime in the previous year. That is a massive amount compared to the 7.3% who reported being a victim of crime last year. However, what is very concerning in the latest victim data is the increase we're seeing between last year and this year in terms of victimization rates, both at the household level and the individual crime level. So I think it would be safe in general prior to this release to have said, be skeptical of trends in SAPS data, but where they are corroborated by trends in victim data, you can assume that there's more veracity to them. What we're seeing now is a slight increase in victimization, and that's concerning, particularly in that increase is coming in the face of SAPS data that suggests continued declines. Speaking to the table, sorry, the next slide. This table is very detailed. I'm happy to speak more about it later, but here I want to highlight that the red arrows are those crimes that we can rely on most. This is SAPS data, changes year on year, 2017-18, and then over a five-year period. The crimes that we know are most reliable, such as murder, bank robbery, carjacking, those have seen significant increases. This is concerning. We can trust this data, and we're seeing increases. Data that's less reliable, such as assault, is showing declines in the SAPS data, but we have reason to be more skeptical of that, particularly in that the SAPS notes that many murders begin as assaults. It doesn't make sense then that assaults are declining while murders increasing. They exist on the same violence continuum. It's much easier to manipulate an assault statistic at a station level than it is a murder statistic. And so we need to treat this with caution. That said, the victim data suggests a slight flattening of assaults, so that's something to be positive about. Something else we learn from the victim data, which we have heard about, is how many victims report their crimes to police. If we compare the last 3 years, so skipping last year, because there's been some change in the way that StatsSA has reported, but if we compare 2 years ago to this year, we see quite a significant decline in reporting rates for many major categories, including categories of crime that we would traditionally think of as we would traditionally have a high degree of confidence in terms of reporting, such as hijacking or car theft, because people usually have insurance. So the fact that we're seeing declines in those reporting categories is something to be concerned about, and that goes together with the declines in confidence in police, which we've already heard about. So there's concern that people are reporting less to the police, and there's a concern that that tracks a decline in satisfaction with police in one's area. Additionally, as we've heard, people are feeling less safe during the day. There's been a slight increase in safety at night. I think we should wait for a few more years to track that trend. But in general, we all know South Africans don't feel particularly safe much of the time. Feelings of safety, confidence in the criminal justice system, these are indicators which are important in terms of interpreting SAFS data and engaging the relationship between the state and its people. So it is possible that some categories of crime are declining. There's confusion. We shouldn't just look at the figures and accept them, but there has been a corroboration between victim data and SAFS data in recent years for particular categories. We shouldn't just dismiss them as false, but we need to treat them with caution. We also need to pay more attention to this decline in satisfaction and reporting. Now, I just want to speak a little bit about the distribution of crime and what we can do with more detailed data moving forward. We've seen this graph provided by SAFS-SA. This shows that there have been fluctuations in where crime is increasing and decreasing across the country. All of you will know that crime differs across space, and as a result, we need to be cautious in terms of talking about national trends. Murder is our most reliable statistic and our best proxy for violence. It's very important to note that in the last financial year, just 30 police stations out of 1,144 accounted for 20% of all murder. 30 police stations. I think any of us can imagine, given the authority and resources, being able to intervene at just 30 police stations. If we could slash violence in those areas, one would have a significant impact on violence nationally. We can expand that to 150 police stations to account for 50% of murder. So we need to say, what is the data telling us? What can we not see from a national level? Where do we need to look for more detail? And murder is our best guide in that regard. Additionally, last year's increase in murder, 42% of those new murders recorded last year came from just 30 stations. So if we imagine having put the lid on the boiling pot in those stations, we would have halved the increase in murder last year. We also know, thanks to the SAPS breakdown of data and the analysis they've been providing in recent years, that a lot of murder, most murder happens over weekends, often at night. So again, we don't have to shift resources at all times. We know where we need to target resources. We also know that in, for instance, the 30 top murder stations, murder is very localized. There are hotspots to which interventions can be targeted. And this brings me to my final points, that we should be using this hotspot murder data as an indicator of violence as a whole, saying where is the greatest amount of harm happening in South Africa. And within those precincts, we need to dig for more data. We can't just rely on the National Victim of Crime Survey and SAFS data, but there are other sources that we can draw on, and there are some very helpful interventions that we could introduce. For instance, looking at emergency response vehicles responding to particular hotspots, public health data, people arriving in casualty units, doing a simple survey saying where did this happen, what happened, and therefore tracking violence that doesn't necessarily end up in police books. Victim surveys within these 30 police precincts, within these 150 police precincts, we need to know what victim experiences are in those spots. We need to know what perceptions of police are in those spots. Because if we can disrupt and intervene in violence in those 150 stations, we can significantly reduce violence in the country as a whole, and hopefully there would be a ripple effect elsewhere. Other examples of data, calls for service. It's very important to look at who's calling police, where are they calling from, and what are they calling for. Most calls to police don't result in a crime being logged, and yet knowing what people are requesting from police tells us what kind of disorder exists in particular spaces and what demands are being placed on the police service. And finally, we want to incentivize our police to problem solve in partnership with other stakeholders, not simply reduce category X by 2%, because it's very easy to reduce category X by 2% while breaking relations with communities, while discouraging people from reporting crime, which distances the relationship between the community and the state. Just one example of how health data can help us understand violence. This is from London, and there are experiments being done in Cape Town by UCT's Public Health, looking at a violence observatory. On the left, we see violence noted from health facilities, you can see the big red squares, and the big red squares don't show up in the Metropolitan Police data. So the Metropolitan Police, if they were dispatching their patrols simply on police data, they would be missing the spots where most violence in that precinct was being generated. This is a simple way to add a nuance to our understanding of risk. So to wrap up, violence and crime prevention must be based on good data. We have great data in the form of the Victim of Crime Survey. We've got excellent data from the SAPS. We need to push it a bit further and make more of it. There's a need to establish a structure that collates and analyzes a range of data that shed light on violence and risk. I know the SAPS turnaround strategy has a number of data analysis centers embedded in it, as does the White Paper on Safety and Security, so it looks like there might be movement in that direction. Initially, we should focus on murder and robbery because those cause the greatest harm and fear. And initially, before these national centers are established, we should start focusing where we know violence is greatest. Finally, communities need information on the location profile and victims and perpetrators and the modus operandi that are taking place. I know that many communities do get access to this from their stations at the station level, but in terms of the rest of us being able to intervene where necessary and provide support, it's important that this data is regularly made available and is public and is as detailed as possible. Of course, there are challenges to it, particularly in terms of auditing, but I think there are ways around that. I would like to draw your attention to a policy brief which the ISS published a couple of weeks ago on whether police crime statistics should be used to assess police, and that's freely available on the website, and I'd like to thank you for your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Fall. We appreciate it very much. We will then move on to Dr. Krichler, the next presenter. You're welcome.
You're not presenting.
So, but you will give comments. Yeah. Right. Thanks a lot. Then we come to the last presenter, Mr. Dali Weyers of SJC. Thank you.
Good morning again. Just behalf of the Social Justice Coalition, Chair, thank you very much for this opportunity. And I just want to acknowledge the members, the National Commissioner, the Secretary for the Police, Mr. Rapia, and then other SATS representatives. This morning, I'm speaking to you about the crime stats, the Victims of Crime Survey, but ultimately being from the SJC always through the prism of police resources. So this is just a kind of breakdown of what I'll be focusing on. I just want to briefly touch on the communities that have seen total shutdowns recently. Just referring to some of the statistics from those precincts. So Bontheuvel, which was one of the communities in Cape Town that saw total shutdown, falls under the Bishop Leyvis police precinct. What's interesting is that so often the mobile police stations seemingly are reserved for poor working class black, African or colored communities. So Bontheuvel is serviced by a mobile police station. But the graph here, and there'll be a few of these, I'm just going to spend some time on this quickly just to kind of explain. But ultimately the blue bars are police per 100,000, and then the red bars are murder per 100,000 over 4 years. We've done it over 4 years just so that those two sets of graphs, or bars at least, the blue one and the red one, can sit on the same graph. So here, for instance, making comparison with Rondebosch, we see that despite having 24 times more murders, Rondebosch has 2 times less police per 100,000 than Rondebosch. Similarly, Westbury in Gauteng, which falls under the Sophia Town Police Precinct, and making comparison with Rosebank there. So Westbury and Sophia Town had 139 times more murders per 100,000 people over 4 years than a comparison here with Rosebank, and yet Rosebank has 3 times more police than Westbury, Sophia Town. Then just looking at trio crimes, We know Nyanga is the murder capital of South Africa. But increasingly, we also know that Nyanga should be known for trio crimes. It's now the top precinct nationally in terms of trio crimes, and then carjacking, which was one of the trio crimes. And here, making comparison with Sea Point, we see that Nyanga has four times less police per 100,000 people than Sea Point. But now we're looking at a comparison between Nyanga and Sea Point of the number of trio crimes, so carjacking, robbery at residential premises, and robbery at non-residential premises that those two communities had experienced. And the reality is that Nyanga, despite having four times less police resources than Sea Point, has a much higher incidence of trio crimes. And trio crimes are crimes that can benefit from intelligence-led professional policing, and that can be addressed by intelligence-led and professional policing. And this can be done because trio crimes often have syndicates involved. These are premeditated crimes. They are often reliant on transport, whether that's the actual hijacked vehicle or to transfer stolen goods. And of course, they then involve stolen goods. This slide, which was made by the South African Police Service to the Portfolio Committee just last month, shows that the majority of crimes in the aggravated robbery category, of which trio crimes is a subcategory, were committed using firearms. And so this is another indication that trio crimes are crimes that can benefit from police action because so often they involve firearms, and of course firearms can be found on suspects, can be found in the vehicles of suspects, and of course unlicensed firearms are evidence for additional charges. Just to make the point, because some of what the SJC and the work that we've done around police resources is very often reduced to a Cape Town issue or a Western Cape issue, so I just want to touch on a few other police precincts that have a high incidence of trio crime. And so the ones that we'll be looking at there are Honeydew and Gauteng, number 2 on this list, and then Tuyando and Limpopo, which is number 5 on this list. So we're now familiar with these graphs, but Honeydew ultimately has 3 times less police resources than Randburg, a kind of random comparison, but yet again has a very high incidence of trio crimes in comparison to Randburg. Similarly, Tuyando, which has 2 times less police per 100,000 people than Malopsdrift in Limpopo, has a much, much higher incidence of trio crimes than Malopsdrift, for instance. Then just moving on to the Civilian Secretariat for Police's Analysis of Resource Allocation, which is a report that we first were made aware of during a Portfolio Committee of Police meeting on the 27th of February this year. We then approached Mr. Rapia and his team and the National Minister and asked for them to make the report or the analysis public, which they since have. And although the analysis reveals a police service that often is not where it needs to be, because it asks the wrong questions and uses the wrong data to inform deployments. And then, according to the analysis, the input sheet used to determine the allocation of human resources through the theoretical human resource requirement, the THRR, has a single gang indicator. And that indicator falls short of accounting for the frequency of gang violence, the size, the nature of the particular gangs, and gang activities. And then I've taken some liberties by actually just quoting from Dr. Kinnis, the content advisor for the Portfolio Committee, from his PhD document, where he says one of the most major developments in understanding gang violence is that SAPS has relatively recently, started making available the numbers of those killed through gang violence. The problem with even that is that it's at a provincial level, so it's not giving us real insight into where these are happening and what the burden of extreme violent crime is with any given precinct. This is just to show that SAFS, to their credit, released those statistics again this year in their presentation to the committee last month. And so clearly SAFS has the data, But the THRR's failure to use this disaggregated data at a precinct level means that communities with the highest incidence of gang murders gets the same weighting for resources in the THRR as precincts with the low incidence of gang murders. Then just moving on to the known link between alcohol use and violence, which isn't acted upon. So the Civilian Secretariat again says that SAPS repeatedly draws links between the levels of alcohol use and abuse and high levels of violence. But despite this, when allocating resources through the THRR, the SAPS does not take into consideration the number of unlicensed liquor outlets in a given area. This is a map of the three police precincts that service the community of Khayelitsha. That would be Khayelitsha / Site B, Harare, and then Lingalethu West. It shows the number of liquor outlets, licensed and unlicensed, across Khayelitsha. And this map is drawn from a study that the Western Cape Department of Community Safety did. And ultimately, what the problem here is that when considering the number of resources that needs allocating to a specific community, despite acknowledging the link between alcohol use and abuse and violence, SAPS only takes this small number of liquor outlets into consideration and not the vast majority of liquor outlets that might be found in a specific community. This is another way in which the discrimination on the basis of race and poverty is impacted by the allocation and is compounded by the allocation of police resources, because the reality is that these unlicensed outlets have the space with which to operate in an informal setting, where they would not necessarily be able to operate that easily in a formal setting. This goes to the point that Dr. Fall was making earlier, in that this graph and chart illustrates the time of day and day of the week that crime takes place in Khayelitsha. It illustrates that there are spikes in crime after dark and over weekends. It in part, I'll acknowledge just in part, and I'd venture that it illustrates the link between alcohol use and violence. And then again, the fact that SAPS has only a quarter of liquor outlets on its radar means that it's not responding adequately, intelligently, to crime intelligence when allocating its police resources. Then just the failure to implement Section 12 of the SAPS Act. This has come up in our police resources court case. And so despite the powers afforded to provincial commissioners under Section 12.3 of the SAPS Act, there were no marked deviations in the majority of provinces from the allocations made by the police's national command. So this is according to the Civilian Secretariat's analysis. In KwaZulu-Natal, they do not deviate from the national allocations due to the province not having alternative criteria which would justify any significant deviations. In the Western Cape, before 2016, there were no deviations from the national allocations, and deviations only started in 2016. We'll cheekily venture that, coincidentally, the Police Resources Court case was launched on March 31st, 2016. Then just to touch on that issue again of what we're coming across is that this issue of police resources is a Western Cape or is a Cape Town-based problem. I just want to unpack the Western Cape national picture. So we've seen that party political dynamics are creating this impression that the Western Cape is under-resourced, and that Cape Town in particular is under-resourced. While we can appreciate here on this specific slide the Premier taking the issue up for her constituents, for residents in the Western Cape, the reality is that the police resources issue is a national issue. The Western Cape ultimately isn't an outlier. Provincial comparisons have limited worth. And then comparisons using the difference between the fixed establishment, the numbers allocated to specific police precincts, and the theoretical allocation are problematic precisely because they elevate the theoretical human resource requirements, which is this formula that the Civilian Secretariat for Police and the Khayelitsha Commission of Inquiry has found issue with. So both the leader of the DA and the Premier of the Western Cape have made the link between murder and police resources. This map here illustrates that murder per police personnel posts reflects the true national picture. Then I'm hoping this is going to do it. Yes, that's doing a nice transition thing. What is illustrated here is what the Khayelitsha Commission alluded to when it said the allocation of police resources post per population looks like an apartheid list. Since the advent of democracy, the police has essentially maintained the former homeland borders through its flawed system of resource allocation. Again, we just want to point out that the Western Cape here isn't an outlier. The Western Cape is pushing this issue because they did approach the Public Service Commission to do an investigation into Western Cape SAPS personnel practices and shortages. It is important to note that the PSC said that the most important development in relation to the allocation of resources to the Western Cape is a pending litigation in the Equality Court. The PSC is therefore of the opinion that the outcome of the court case should be awaited, and this would have a major impact on the allocation of resources within the SAPS. And so even though we have been somewhat critical of the Western Cape here, we do want to state that the Western Cape, more than any other province, is taking its constitutional right of oversight over the police seriously. Other provinces should be put on notice, to paraphrase a constitutional court judgment, that whilst a province has no control over the policing function, it is a legitimate interest that its residents are shielded from crime and that they enjoy the protection of effective, efficient, and visible policing. Provinces have the authority, and here very importantly, the duty to raise concerns on policing in the province with the minister. Then towards wrapping up, just next steps. I think it's important for the committee to note that we are expecting the Equality Court case judgment towards the end of November. We've had some assurances that that would be the case, but of course we have no guarantee and no date has been set. We also then just want to look at environmental design issues and guidelines for visible policing and informal settlements. The Khayelitsha Commission recommended that guidelines regulating policing and informal settlements be developed. We know that these haven't been developed and that they do not exist. We want to point out that the constitutional obligation of the SAPS towards communities is not contingent on where people live, whether there are roads, and whether they have clearly identifiable addresses. This, however, doesn't mean that the SJC is unsympathetic to the environmental design challenges that make communities less safe, and you have particular informal settlements, and that make policing harder in informal settlements. This is why the Social Justice Coalition, in addition to our policing and safety and justice campaign, also campaigned for the incremental upgrading of informal settlements, which includes the provision of public lighting. These are slides from a presentation that the former Khayelitsha Cluster Commander, Major General Brandt, made to members of the SJC in September of 2016. We have no reason to believe that this has changed. So we note here that this is what the police have to contend with in informal settlements. Another slide just showing the lack of lighting in informal settlements in Khayelitsha at night. Then this map from the city of Cape Town illustrates the type of lighting that services some of the biggest informal settlements and some of the most violent informal settlements in the country. The red dots there are the apartheid era Apollo lights, which the city of Cape Town itself acknowledges cast very long shadows and very dark shadows. And we'll also note that the majority of Khayelitsha, which is 50% formal, 50% informal, whether it's formal or informal, is lit by these apartheid era Apollo lights. Similarly, the Nyanga Police Precinct, South Africa's murder capital, follows a similar trend, and so that's the boundary of the police precinct. And again, a heavy reliance on the red dots, the Apollo lights, and then some more effective street-level public lighting, which would be the orange dots. In the article earlier that I quoted from the leader of the opposition, which he said that the police station here in Nyanga serves a community that suffers the worst assault from violent criminals anywhere in South Africa, and yet it remains under-resourced, is true. Both SAPS and the City of Cape Town are to be held accountable for this. We realize that public lighting isn't of the purview of the Portfolio Committee on Police, but we do want to say that we note and acknowledge the difficulties that police and residents face in informal settlements, and this is to underscore the need for guidelines for visible policing and informal settlements to be developed so that there can be greater interaction in those spaces between the police and citizens, but also that the police can be safer when servicing those communities. So then just to wrap up, to reiterate that South Africa deserves a professional police service committed to intelligence-led, evidence-based and responsive policing. Police can have a real impact on crime if they approach the incidence of trio crimes with adequate resources and sound crime intelligence. SAPS can put an end to the call for the deployment of the army in our communities by accounting for the frequency of gang violence and the size and nature of particular gangs and gang activities, and again allocating resources accordingly. SAPS can have an impact on interpersonal violence by meaningfully engaging the known link between alcohol use and violence. And then SAPS can be more responsive if clear guidelines and criteria are developed to assist provincial commissioners in reallocating the resources. And then party political interests should not be setting the police resources agenda. And then SAPS must immediately develop guidelines for visible policing of informal settlements. And then all organs of state, whether that's local, provincial, or national, have a duty to respect, protect, and promote fundamental rights. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bayers, for your presentation. It's appreciated. Dr. Fischer, anything from your side at this stage? You're covered.
Right, honourable members, we're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we will come back for the interaction and questions. And also, of course, the South African Police Service to give comments at the end. Thank you.
I don't have any other presentation.
Data from the operators, and that's
I got that.
Struggling with the
I told him this morning about this. His name is mentioned in some of the stuff. So you should know he writes sometimes that this is for Oxford.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Sorry.
I know.
They can't manage it if they manage the source, the original source.
Honourable members, 2 minutes. 2 minutes, thank you.
Well, it depends on its value.
Thank you very much, honourable members. We're going to continue with our interaction. We're going now to go to questions and input, and of course we will give also later for SAPS an opportunity to respond. First, a few questions from my side, and then I'll go to Honourable Ramatlakane. We'll start from that side. Maybe the first issues from my side. Some of the presenters indicated that the availability of regular statistics is quite important. Now, if we can have a response from the Civilian Secretariat as well as SAPS, where are we in terms of moving to the quarterly statistics? It was previously indicated as a process. There was, a political decision to maybe look at that. But if that is part of the solution, the low-hanging fruit, to ensure that communities have those stats readily available, to ensure that they also can be resource placements, what is the strategy? Are we going to maintain the status quo, wait a year, and then we can't really intervene? Then a question to Stats SA. We had, this last 4 years regular interactions in terms of SAPS moving to official statistics. What is the latest? Are we there? I know it's the self-evaluation part was still outstanding and some other processes, but what is the current situation with regard to that? And then just maybe a question to the National Commissioner. I think most of the presentations this morning indicated that the top 30 stations, those crime hotspots, in terms of a strategy moving forward to ensure that we address those stations proactively, what would the National Commissioner say in terms of that? Let's go to Honourable Ramatlakane.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thanks to the presenters. I think that lots of the presenters, they're somewhere where they meet in terms of analysis. And maybe, Chair, in terms of the what do we do, is that the number of positive issues that are raised, tracking down what has happened, what are the good things, and then everybody comes to a point where they say that there was a downward trend, but then there's also a spike that happens in the financial year. There seems to be a common analysis which year the spike has happened. So perhaps in the response, when the SEPS responds to that question, maybe it will be useful. Maybe if not now, if they don't, we don't also want to ambush them. That they sit here, and then we expect a response immediately. To take all of what has been presented, and also do some responses about the downward trend and the spike up. What then happened? Because there must be something that happened from that year where the spike happened. Is it the resource link? Or what was the general things that contributed to that? Because I think that if we want to arrest the what has been identified, we need to understand that paradigm, what happened there, and what we need to do in order to address that particular aspect. So that's the first thing. So I'm trying to generalize on all of the presentation. The one thing that I think the analysis has to perhaps take into account is well and good to analyze the statistics, the core statistics as you receive it. But if you don't actually have the foundation of that analysis, for example, if you look at Nyanga, if you do a pure clinical analysis to say this is the crime, this is murder, this is this, and you don't understand the environment issue, and you make a conclusion on that issue, you're actually going to miss the point because you don't have all the tools to help you to say the reason, because for the reason for us to understand the context, the problem there, then respond with a policing plan. There is a couple of issues that we have to take into account. Otherwise, it become a not helpful analysis, which is maybe that's the work that perhaps the police will do, and the police will present in terms of their own internal, in terms of what are the things that are all the environmental poison, if you like. Let me end here, Chair. From a little bit of engagement and participating in that environment of policing, if you mess to understand the contributory factor of the environmental design, and you dismiss the environmental design not as a factor, in fact the major factor to bringing down weather crime in various areas, then I question that. I mean, the fact that you have a problem of mushrooming of township, of mushrooming of informal settlement, which has a constraining effect for policing, you can't dismiss it. You can't dismiss that fact and say it is a non-issue insofar as effective policing. Because what are you saying? Unless we are living somewhere else. If you know about the situation in Marikana and the explanation that we're given in terms of how is the mushrooming of that environment, of that from informal township, you don't even have a place where the horse can walk because it's close to each other. The policing becomes even more difficult. But if you have an environment, if you have lighting system, light plays a role. Actually, if you look at the rave problem, the darkness of what happens in the informal area, and if you identify, the police identify it as an issue, and you say there's a light, you've got to bring in the municipality on board. You've got to bring in the department, various department on board. So I find the last presenter to be dismissive of the environmental design as a factor to policing. And I question it. I question it as to why is it so? Why is it that you can argue that the fact of the matter that there is a problem in Philippi in terms of density, in terms of this, is non-issue. All what the police has to do is to make sure that they bring down matters in that area. I agree about what the police must do, but it must be a package of measure for that, for the police to be able to do that. The police don't construct the road. They don't construct the road. They don't put in lights. It's the job of the municipality to do that, or other department to do it. So I don't think we should mislead ourselves into this complex topic and dismisses others as a non-factors. I think what we should be saying, and I expect the professional who understand this when they present, because I don't agree with that particular proposition. It's simply wrong. It misleads us into believing that that this is a non-factors. The study was done. I can't remember whether it was a UCT some time back, about in between the period when crime was coming down, trying to understand the reasons why has the crime come down in this particular year. What has the police been done to do this? I can't remember whether it was a health. And they found that there was a problem that the police was doing effective work in making sure that they minimize shebeens, that the drinking problem, closing down the illegal shebeen, all of these things which were seen as a bad thing, has contributed to the decline, has contributed to the trauma unit, the emergency trauma unit, in terms of a Friday night, people coming with the stab wounds and knives. Now, you can't simply dismiss that is not a fact. That is a fact. So I'm just saying, Chair, I'm pleading with the to say, I think let's just be objective.
I can say a lot about the Khayelitsha Commission. I can say a lot about the weaknesses which has happened that led to a particular outcome or recommendation. But I don't have the time to get into that. But let's not lift it as the silver bullet into what has happened in there, because it was informed by politics as well. It was informed by politics bringing certain things out for a particular agenda. So but I don't want to go there. All I want to say is that living here, and I mean, being working in Khayelitsha and having been engaged, I think that things that we lift up here as a solution are not quite. It's not a full package of measures. I don't know what informs it. It's a study. But the study has been done. Maybe let's engage with that. But even the questions that have been asked for it is the one that can give you a particular conclusion. That's my contribution, Chair, but I think there's been useful stuff that has been presented. If we can only have time to get some analysis, but not only the analysis, a plan to address the problem. Why the spike? If you answer the question, why the spikes, then we'll say, what do we do to bring down the spikes down? If the last 10 years, there's a 55% there was a decline in terms of that, now there's 17% upward. What has gone wrong in that particular aspect? And I'm sure that we can get the police to answer that question. And then collectively in the engagement, then we find a solution. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable
Ramatlakane, Honourable Markey, and then Honourable Mbele.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Just a point of caution, especially on the Social Justice Coalition presentation. In Parliament, we are different political parties. And if in your presentation, you are going to put in my money and Zile, which is irrelevant to the fact that I'm in here, you are causing trouble. Why mention them knowing very well that we are different political parties in here? Just a word of caution. Because next time we'll end up debating that fact, not the contents of the presentation itself. That is the first thing. And then on the survey, it is said that we have got around 6 million plus or minus of unrecorded, should I call them migrants or so. So in terms of the increases and the averaging of the increases, does it include that? Because if it doesn't, maybe it's not a true reflection. Because if we have got more than 6 million over and above the population that we use as the base, then that might be a problem, because we see a lot of illegal migrants are being arrested on a daily basis on most of these crimes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Honourable Markey, Honourable Mbele.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for all the presentations. My first question is a general one. I don't think it's directed to any one of the presenters or the stakeholders from earlier on this morning. And it's also a question I've had sort of bouncing around my head for a number of years. because it's one aspect of the crime stats that I've never quite been able to get a grip on, especially concerning the increase in the murder count. And I guess it's actually a two-part question. The first part of it is to ask whether it's still the case that murder is primarily, if not overwhelmingly, what's usually called a social fabric crime. I think the figure that's usually cited is that 70% to 80% of murders are of that nature, so emanating from interpersonal violence or interpersonal conflicts, domestic settings, and therefore rooted in those aspects of family and social dysfunction. And then linked to that is to ask whether the recent increases that are reflected in the crime stats are a reflection of worsening social fabric conditions and or reflective of population increases given the context of sort of call it murder prone communities, right? So that's the one part of it. Or as an on the other hand aspect, do the increases much more reflect simply the commission of murder during violent organized crime, so like aggravated robbery, and thus it's a picture of murder piggybacking on increased organized violent crime? Because I'm trying to get a grip on whether or to what extent the increase of murder is a policeable and therefore preventable trend, or is it about the whole of society approach that Ms. Omar referred to in her presentation? Because, much of the feedback that I get from police station oversights is that when it comes to your murders, assaults, rapes, it's much more a case of unleashing, an army of social workers as opposed to an army of law enforcers. But that's the question that I've been sort of juggling with for a while. My second question is from the Stats SA presentation. In a number of the slides, there was quite a notable discrepancy between what the Victim of Crime Survey estimates indicated as being trends versus the SAPS reported cases. So, with home robberies, the survey indicated a decrease, whereas the reported cases from SAPS were increases. And I saw the same in at least one or two other slides. Same with stock theft, decline from the survey, increase from SAPS, and same with murder and culpable homicide. And so my simple question was, what accounts for that discrepancy? Is it simply a function of a particular sample size just reveals those kind of findings? Is it much more of a perception issue? Are you able to sort of give us some clarity and shed some light on that? And Chair, my third question is still information, so I want to work on it some more and keep it for the next round. Thanks.
Thank you. Honourable Bailey, Honourable Kalabona.
Thank you, Chair. This would be to, I think, the National Police Commissioner. I'm interested in what the SAPS is doing in terms of rewarding stations who bring down crime in their area. In other words, turn citizens away when they try to open a case. I was doing oversight at Newlands East Station last week, despite, as you know, the acting provincial commissioner forbidding it. But they had actually turned away a journalist who tried to report a missing person. And she was a very strong woman and held her ground, and finally a superior had to come and take the case. So I know instructions have gone out that you can go and report a case anywhere, but it is still going on, and I believe it's intimately related to the crime statistics. As they keep them low, they're lauded, some of them get monetary rewards. So I know it was going to be reviewed. I'm very interested in how far that process is. And, of course, we have excellent news that 17 of the community-reported serious crimes have decreased. And I don't think we can stress how good that news is enough. But, of course, there has to be some kind of strategy in terms of murder. And, again, we've had the input from the Secretariat, but we're up to 57 a day. And I've looked and can't find, for example, in terms of strategy, how many illegal firearms have been destroyed in the last year. You obviously pick them up at crime scenes, etc., but I'm very nervous that our stations have become firearm ATMs. Our SAPS members have never been at such threat, where people stroll in, public works are not assisting you in giving you good security at the stations, and they just stroll in with an AK, and next thing, every firearm out of SAPS 13 and everywhere else is gone. So, destruction of illegal firearms, have you got a figure for us? Is it higher or lower than the previous year? And any other strategies you'd care to share? The references to sexual offences, I'm interested, I think this was through stats. I can't remember who did the presentation. In the research in terms of sexual offences, which of the entities that were referring to sexual offences actually work with the NGOs who deal on the ground, and women would much rather go to an NGO and have the whole process gone through in a quiet and gentle environment than go to police stations, because the ones I've visited say that only 1 in 10 women report a rape to the police. I agree that the increased numbers show perhaps people are becoming more comfortable going to the victim-friendly rooms. I've visited many of them, and some of them are marvelous and run by outside people, and they're really very comforting. But some of them say it's only 1 in 20. So we're not looking at 50,000. We're looking at least 500,000 sexual offences in a year. So I think the focus really has to be more on what to do and strategies around that. Now, while knowing the numbers of crimes that were committed is crucial, knowing the numbers of arrests, it seems to me that the measure of the conviction rate is not focused on sufficiently within the SAPS. Should there not be those three indicators, the crime, the arrest, and the convictions, giving equal weight in your analysis? Frequently the success is claimed in terms of conviction rates, but it's not in relation to the total crime committed, it's in relation to the detection rates, which may be so low that they're almost invisible. So I would like your input on where your focus is in that regard. To Stats SA, I'm interested in the comparison between the numbers of citizens who pay for insurance compared to the number of crimes reported, because as we grow, I assume, and I can only assume because there's a lack of data unless you've done the specific research, that the numbers who insure their possessions grows, and then those people, because they need a CAS number for insurance, report. So I'm interested in whether or not you've done that research and what the outcome is. To the SAPS, considering the amount set aside in terms of civilian claims, you're allowed for $6.5 billion in this last report. Are those SAPS members who committed those crimes now part of these crime statistics that are presented to us? I so fear and have for many years that there's a parallel criminal justice system where they get a SAPS tap on the wrist and a letter in their file, but they don't go through the legal processes. I want to know if SAPS members are truly being held to account, or if the IPED is just being ignored. And the final two are to the National Police Commissioner specifically. Sir, how open are you, unlike your various predecessors, to working with institutions such as these in terms of plugging into their expertise with a view to utilizing that information? I mean, the analysis by the ISS is amazing, and for you to plug into that and focus, as he has suggested, on just those stations could turn around these stats between now and next year. That's my belief. I'm interested in whether, because I've seen them treated very poorly by previous National Police Commissioners. And finally, also to the National Police Commissioner, the figures shown by the Social Justice Coalition in terms of station resources. I was at Sophia Town 2 weeks ago, and they have, according to the RAG, under 50% of the staff they should have on that RAG. And this is a high crime, highly problematic area with the most brilliant station commander, but she's running on fumes there. So could you tell us, when you do your resources, is it only based on the estimated population? I know the claim is it's based on the census before the last one, which is puts you hundreds of thousands of people out, or is it based on your crime statistics, or a percentage of both? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mura.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentations. In social justice, in slide 9, what is 7.7 other stands for? My second question in social justice, in slide 25, you said police aren't where gangs are. What do you mean? In your analysis, can you please tell us, where are the police focusing on? Social justice again, in slide 30, you are telling us about Cele gets a 40-page Zile Zinga over policing in Cape Town, and you are telling us what Zile said. Do you have proof of that? Did you consult the minister about this letter before taking it to us? And what I want to ask you, if, like you are members of parliament, we are doing an oversight. I don't think when we are doing an oversight, we are reporting to you or to other people, because if I'm doing an oversight in Western Cape or Eastern Cape, you don't know about that. How did you know about all these things? Because as members of ANC, we are also doing an oversight, but here we are telling us about DA, only DA. Why? My second question, my fourth or what, I don't remember. Is there an MOU? Is the MOU with Statistics SA still operational with the subs? Is there a good cooperation between SARS and Statistics SA? My other question, did the SARS crime statistic reach the South African Statistical Quality Assessment Framework self-assessment stage 2017-2018 crime statistics? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mula, Honourable
Malabachi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also had a problem with this thing of the visit of my mind. The minister has on more than once visited Nyanga Police Station. This portfolio committee also did visit Nyanga Police Station. But SJC, can you tell me why you specifically select my money? My second question to SJC is, what did you find out about the collusion of criminals and magistrates and prosecutors? My question to SAPS, what factors do you consider in your allocation of resources, be it human resources and everything? My other one to SAPS, most violent cases happen during weekends and at night, according to the presentations. Do you have seniors like station commanders visiting police stations during that time. My last one, tell us about the manner in which crime statistics are applied as a tool to fight crime. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you,
honourable members. Just one final one from my side for this round. Just in terms of the victims of crime survey, the civilian secretariat as advisor to the minister, did you participate maybe in the process, and did you present maybe a memo to the minister on this specific study? Thank you. Let's go then to the various institutions. Let's start with civilian secretariat, then Stats SA, then also our research institutions, and then finally to SAPS. Thank you. Mr. Appiah.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think, except for the last questions, all the questions were directed to other presenters. But I think what I just want to say is what we are spending sleepless nights on now is what should we do, because there's a lot of all information out there. On Monday, I had a meeting with the community of Nyanga at the police station. And what they said was there's no government in Nyanga. The Metro Police doesn't enter Nyanga, and that is transport, and a lot of taxi violence is happening around that area. The police station commander is expected to become a social worker, to deal with issues of education, to deal with town planning issues. No matter how many police officers we can put there, if government is not working effectively and functioning in an area, it's not going to assist in dealing with the crimes there. So that's what is now keeping us awake at night, and we are doing this in line with what our white paper on policing says. Now practically saying, how do we implement this at local government? Because you cannot have the police doing everything. They are not going to focus on the policing work. The victim survey report, we didn't make a submission to minister as a separate matter. In terms of the reports that we submit on monitoring and evaluation, our research reports, we will actually refer to some of these studies that are being addressed, but we didn't have it as a single issue that we submitted to the minister to say this is what needs to be done. And actually, when we deal with our policy formulation, we take into consideration the studies that have been done, stats studies, and so on. So we infuse the information in our policy work and also in our research reports. Thank you.
Ms. Wilmar,
yes.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add that we participated in the development of the questionnaire for the victim of crime survey. We were invited, and then we also just attended the release of the crime survey, the victims of crime survey. So that was just our participation. Chair, just one point that I want to raise. I think Honourable Bele raised the issue of murder as a social fabric issue. I just want to make the point that violence is such a big thing in the country. It's such a big issue, and hence our focus of the white paper safety is not just crime prevention, it's crime and violence prevention. But if you look at the numbers of social workers in the country, we only have 19,000 social workers. And if you look at private security, we have 500,000, just a little bit more. So there's a very big discrepancy between the level of violence we have in the country but the number of social workers that we have in the country, which is only 19,000. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Umar. Yes, that's SA. You're welcome.
I'll start with some of the responses. There was a question with regards to, actually two, with regards to the memorandum of understanding between South African Police Services and SACS. I can say that we have a very close working relationship and that we are still busy with this whole process of getting the SAPS data classified as official statistics. In fact, we are currently in meetings with them, have been this week and will be next week, to put together a steering committee as well as DQAT committee that will be doing the official SASQAF assessment before the end of the financial year. The mini self-assessment was done partly on this 2017-18 data. There was also several meetings where we looked at the data before it was released and we signed off on the absolute numbers. So that's with regards to the quality assessment. I would like to also invite General Sekukuni to add, if he would like, to anything to this comment, and then I'll continue answering the questions that we had.
General, in your capacity as member of the steering committee.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I can confirm that the relationship with the status is still intact, and we've had the meetings like Dr. Schmidt has alluded. Then in the previous round, we outlined the six phases of engagement that we need to undertake. And I can say that we have successfully completed the fifth stage, which is the self-assessment, and we are gearing towards stabilizing an independent data quality assessment team, which will include Status A and other researchers and institutions, so that we can finally take the process through the final independent assessment. Then the statistician general will then either declare whether it's official or not. But then in the case that it is not declared as official, there will be recommendations in terms of improvements of what other areas of the SAPS statistical value chain still needs to be improved, then we can then improve on those and then reassess again.
Honourable Corbonnet, follow up on that issue, yes?
Sorry, perhaps I misheard. Are we talking about the statistics that have just been released being declared to be official, or the statistics from the SAPS overall, which only now they're working towards? So I'm seeing nodding. So you're saying the statistics we have received over the past forever are not considered by Stats SA to be official because they've never been? Oh, my good Lord. Thank you.
May I just respond to this? Yes. We've been working closely with SAPS, and in fact, the new structure that they've implemented in terms of collection, et cetera, have all been a result of the close collaboration. And we are working towards an official declaration by the Statistician General. But this is a long process. So we are busy with that process. There was actually a question from this side about the 2017-18 statistics. And we've worked very closely with them while they were busy preparing that as part of this process. But none of the statistics have yet been declared as official. So that it's just part of a long-term process, and we are hoping that by the end of this financial year, we would have concluded that process.
Thank you. You
can continue with the rest of the questions.
Thank you. Thanks
yes.
a lot.
Okay, so the second question, I think Honourable Markey asked about the illegal immigrants and migrants, whether they are included in the statistics. Our sample includes all households in South Africa, regardless of whether they have a legal or illegal status. So we would also visit migrants, whether they are legal or illegal, and ask them about their victimization experience. In addition to that, our population estimates, which is prepared by the Chief Directorate of Diego sitting behind me, estimate the population of South Africa regardless of people's migration status. So our population estimates, official population estimates, includes all people in the borders of living in the borders of South Africa. But I would like to invite him maybe now to just say a few words about our population estimates.
Thank you very much. You're welcome, sir. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson. If you'll allow me, I would just like to relay a little bit of the way in which population estimates have been used to generate the crime stats that the South African Police Service has prepared through the SAPS crime stats publication. On an annual basis, we receive a request from the SAPS to provide them with population estimates for the middle of the financial year, that would be the end of September, at national and provincial level, which is used as a denominator in the calculation of the crime stats. Now, when engaging on an exercise like this, it's always very important to compare apples with apples, and the apples that we are comparing here are making sure that the same population estimation series is being used. So each year we release population estimates. Each one of those years can be viewed as a separate series. And in the current SAPS crime stats report, there was a query that was raised around the use of population estimates, and it was evident that for the last year in the series, in other words, the 17-18 year, that a separate series was used to that of all the preceding years. So we were asked to intervene. We intervened. We advised the SAPS on what should be done. And so henceforth, all population estimates related to the SAPS crime stats will be based to the 2017 midget population estimates until a decision is made to review the series being used, and that will probably take place after the census in approximately 2022 or 2023. So I'd like to reaffirm that the relationship between StatsSA and the SA Police Service is a strong one. We receive no resistance of any nature from the SAPS when we corrected them, and they were happy to be corrected, and they have been extremely cooperative in this regard. I'd also like to speak about the fact that we only do so at national and provincial level. We're actually releasing district estimates next week for 2018, and the reason why the SAPS crime stats do not receive mid-year estimates at district level, when I say district, I mean district municipalities as proclaimed by the Municipal Demarcation Board, is because the police districts and the districts that come from the Municipal Demarcation Board are not compatible. They aren't the same. So it would be very useful and very helpful if there was some kind of alignment. I think the civilian secretariat this morning also spoke about the fact that Census 2011 numbers are being used at police station level with some kind of incremental increase on a year-on-year basis. Now, when we talk about population estimates, it's always very difficult, and methods do not really exist to estimate the population at small areas like that of a police station level. So we are unable to provide estimates at such a small level on a year-by-year basis. But I'd like to caution against applying a standard increment on a year-on-year basis, because the population in one police station district may grow at a completely different rate of that of another. And if you accumulate these in an intercensal period between 2011 and 2021, by the time you reach 2021, you may get very disjointed figures, which when you update with the 2021 census, you won't have a consistent time series. So I think that it is something that SAPS and StatsSA needs to work on, maybe come up with a customized solution on how to deal with estimates at police station level, and we'll be more than happy to deal with that.
I'd also like to just mention something that my colleague next to me, Dr. Schmidt, raised around the undocumented migrants that was raised by Honorable Marquet. The census counts everybody, regardless of your migrant status, and the census is really the foundation of any data that we use for the creation of the major population estimates. We also update this by using the registration of births and deaths that the Department of Home Affairs collects, and we use other empirical sources as well. So I want to dispel the myth, because this has been raised in many fora, mentioned by many individuals, that the mid-year population estimate excludes undocumented migrants, and this is absolutely untrue. The mid-year population estimates, which estimates for this year a population of 57.73 million persons, is inclusive of all people who are born inside or outside the country, and we have great confidence in this, because we know that if there were large amounts of individuals who are not being accounted for, we'd be able to see that in the registration of births of such women. We'd be able to see it in the registration of deaths of people within certain age groups, as well as through a variety of other administrative sources. The Statistician General has published just last week a piece on the Africa Check website, which explains how the calculation of migration statistics is compiled, and which explains in a little bit more detail to what I've done about how the notion that there are many millions of one nationality or the other that are unaccounted for or undocumented for is not the correct thing to say. So I think those are the three points that I wanted to make, and I hope it adds a bit of value to the discussion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
So for your input, yes, you can, Dr. Schmidt.
I'll try and be quick about this. The next question came about, I think it's, from the Honourable Mbele, which is the reported cases where we see in admin an increase or a decrease, but in our Vox data we see either also an increase or a decrease, and it doesn't always correspond. I think when we look at the reported crimes at the police stations, there are two things that play a role in those numbers, and I think that's why, like the Institute of Security Studies, a lot of role players call for not using crime statistics to measure the effectiveness of the police services, is the decision to report can influence that number. So that number doesn't only reflect an increase or a decrease in crime, it reflects also that decision to report or not report. And as the public confidence increases or decreases in the police, they may be more likely to report, and then it looks like an increase in crime, but it's actually just a higher propensity to report. Whereas in the victimization survey, we have a reasonably stable measurement, in the sense that we ask ourselves, have you been victimized and have you reported yes or no? So in our case, of course, the weaknesses are we're dealing with a sample survey, a cluster sample survey. Something such as murder, which is considered a rare statistical event, is very difficult to pick up reliably with a small sample survey. Sexual assault, very complicated, because we are sitting maybe in a household context where the perpetrator may be sitting next to the victim, and we are asking, have you been a victim of sexual assault? So there are also caveats in the survey data, and I think that's why it's really important that we continue to report them together. Okay, so that was then that question, and I've responded to the question on the South African Quality Assurance Framework, which was a joint one between the two of you. Cases and admin increase accounts for them. And then there was a question from the Honourable Barnard about whether we've ever compared people who pay for insurance and our reporting rates. We have not done that, but that's actually a suggestion that we need to look at closer. What we have been doing recently is we've included a question on vehicle ownership, for example, because to get the denominator for hijackings and so on, it's a bit misleading if we know that not all South African households own vehicles. So that's actually another suggestion that we can follow up in terms of the insurance data. Then I think I've covered all my questions. Would you like to add something to Gwen or Sunny Boy? Are you okay?
Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Let's go to Dr. Fall. Is there any responses from your side?
Thanks very much. I'll just respond to a couple of the questions. Honourable Ramatul Khanna, in terms of explaining the uptick in murder, I think this is, I think both the decline in murder and the uptick are difficult to pin down. The United States experienced a massive crime decline in the 90s, and they've got many amazing universities with lots of funding, and questions still remain unanswered as to what brought about that crime decline. So we don't have firm answers, but I think we just need to pay attention to it and do our best to target interventions and monitor and evaluate their effects. I think there was some erosion of the criminal justice system at the time, which we're recovering from at the moment, but I doubt that that accounts for the uptick in murder. Honourable Mbele, in terms of murder being a social fabric type crime, again, the additional analysis we're getting from the SAPS these days is hugely helpful in understanding this. I think the SAPS would suggest that a lot of violence is still interpersonal between people who know each other. When we look at the latest breakdown in causes of murder, 22% were ascribed to gang violence, and that was the largest category. But gang violence is also easier to identify because it's often in public. The individuals might be known to be linked to gangs, etc. And the full 100% isn't accounted for. So I suspect that most violence is still interpersonal and between people who know each other. That's supported by the victim survey pointing out that most assaults happen in the home. So we know that violence is rooted in the home still. And this takes me to something I didn't bring up in my presentation, but which is very important to us from the ISIS perspective, is when we say target murder hotspots, for instance, work to reduce murder, that doesn't mean we are simply addressing people who are getting into potentially lethal fights. It means holistic interventions that disrupt violence in the home. So we know that 1 in 3 children in South Africa is hurt by a parent or a caregiver. 99% of children, followed in a massive VITS study in the greater Soweto area over a 24-odd-year period, I think, 99% of them had experienced violence in their lives. These are the things we need to address if we want to stop the assaults in the home, if we want to stop the murders between people who know each other. So addressing murder means not just traditional policing. In terms of the Honourable Kola Barnard, I just wanted this wasn't a question to me, but I just wanted to comment on your saying, should we not equally weight crime, arrest, and conviction? I think I mentioned it before, and I think you're aware, but we do need to caution about placing any weight on crime in general. We can weight particular types of crime, and particularly in particular precincts, but simply to say we're going to reward or punish based on fluctuations and trends sets up too many perverse incentives. The same with arrests. It's very easy to arrest people. It's much harder to arrest people legitimately. And if people are rewarded for arrests, that can significantly erode the relationship between the state and those being arrested. So we need to caution against those as well. Of course, conviction is great, but they're just not simple indicators. I just want to say a little bit about a Harvard criminologist who, in commenting on this and saying we need to move away from that, he suggested that real successes in crime control would not produce big annual reductions in crime because this is only possible when crime is already out of control. So you wouldn't see lots of arrests either. You wouldn't see lots of coercive interventions because real crime management requires skillful engagement with problems at a societal level, at a local level, spotting things before they get out of control and working with local level people to ensure that they don't get out get out of control. And of course, these are difficult in terms of performance management, difficult to measure. We do need metrics to hold people accountable to, but we also need to be careful of what those might incentivize. Thanks.
Thank you very much,
Mr. Weyers.
Thanks again, Chair. Let me just start off by saying that the Social Justice Coalition is a nonpartisan organization. We're a membership-based social movement. And yes, then just to kind of respond to some of the specific issues. Ultimately, the SJC is an equal opportunity critic. At the moment, we currently have two cases in front of the Equality Court here in Cape Town, the one being the Police Resources Court case, and so that's directed at SAPS nationally, which is a national function, which falls under an ANC government, but we're also in the Equality Court on a case of the provision of sanitation to informal settlements in townships across Cape Town, and so obviously that's directed at the City of Cape Town, which is governed by the Democratic Alliance. On the issue of environmental design, maybe I should apologize if my presentation wasn't clearer, but in no way, and I think my wording exactly was, are we unsympathetic to the environmental design issues that impact on a lack of safety and that impact on the ability of the police to provide a service. I highlighted the issue of the lack of public lighting, which is a municipal function, and the impact that that would have on the ability of police to do their work, but also on the safety of communities. And then raise the issue of the fact that the SJC's biggest and broadest campaign is ultimately the upgrading of informal settlements. So it is an attempt to make informal settlements dignified spaces in which citizens can live and ultimately which would also create an environment that's easier for the police to access and to provide a service to. The quoting of various political figures, I'm not going to apologize for. In this forum and in this space, MPs might have made the decision to not call a spade, but ultimately communities are now being confronted with campaigning in the build-up to next year's elections. And given the fear that we've heard about quite a bit today in this room, that citizens are feeling and people living in South Africa are feeling, experiencing, that is something that can be too easily used to inform the way in which residents might vote. And so we'll call that out, especially when what is being said is wrong and doesn't actually hold up to the facts. And so the issue there, specifically quoting Maimani and Zilla, was me being, or the Social Justice Coalition, being critical of them saying that the Western Cape is under-resourced, when the reality is that that's not the case. The Western Cape isn't an outlier, and that other provinces actually, and specifically other police precincts in other provinces, have it far worse than precincts in the Western Cape. Then, just to raise the issue of, and then to respond to specific questions then, unfortunately, MP Mula, the other in slide number 9, and so that's the instruments used most frequently in aggravated robbery, that slide is from the presentation that the police made on the release of the annual crime statistics, and so hopefully maybe members of the police might be able to respond to tell us what that other is. That was a very good question. In terms of why aren't, or why can we say police aren't where gangs are, that was based on some of the findings of the Civilian Secretariat, not that they pointedly said that they aren't there, but they said that when looking at the issue of gangs, police nationally in their theoretical human resource requirements are actually just asking the question, is there a gang in this community or isn't there a gang in this community? And that means that you're not necessarily responding to, is this a community that has had multiple gang murders in the last year? Is this a community in which there is one or two or three or four gangs operating? What do we suspect the size of those gangs are? What's the economy behind those gangs? And so it's not asking those questions to really get a nuanced insight into what those gang dynamics are in any given police precinct and then allocating resources accordingly. And then just on the point of the compliment that I extended to the Western Cape, that was not to diminish the oversight role of any members of this committee. Ultimately, what I was alluding to there is the powers of premiers in provinces afforded to them by Section 2063 of the Constitution, which says that they have an oversight role. Now, I stand to be corrected, but, and again, I was critical of my Imani and Zilla earlier, nonpartisan, but to Zilla's credit is that she has taken up that oversight role and she's pushing it. So if we're saying that the Western Cape isn't an outlier in terms of its level of under-resourcing, we have to ask the question, where are the other premiers in provinces where there are police precincts that are supremely under-resourced in raising this issue of that under-resourcing with SAPS at a national level? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Baez. Dr. Kriga, from your side, you're welcome.
Thank you, Jake. I just have to correct everyone, please. I'm not a doctor yet. I'm working on it. Hopefully soon. So a couple of points. So I think the most important one I want to raise is I'm very glad to have heard the colleague from SATSA say that they want to work on producing more regular population estimates at the station level. I think that's absolutely vital. We cannot wait 10 years to know what's happening at a station level. I don't know if that's going to involve satellite imagery or ESCOM demands. I don't know how, but we need to work out a way to have at least every 5 years. Maybe it can't be on an annual basis, but for example, in Philippi East, we see that its murder rate per capita is extremely high, but that's based on 2011 census data. In 2011, Marikana informal settlement didn't exist. In Philippi East. So we're using completely the wrong population estimate in that precinct because we don't have anything better. So I think it's absolutely vital that SATSA works with the police to develop this on an ongoing basis because we can't do anything without that, and it distorts all our analysis. A couple of other points about... the timing of the spike. So yes, that a number of crimes went up from 2011-2012. We see that very clearly, and I just want to reiterate what Dr. Fall has said. These things are not as easy to explain as we want them to be, but one of the reasons that we know so little about it is because we don't have the data we need at a station level. It's excellent that we now know, you know, times of day, weapon use, gender and age group of, for example, murder victims, but we need that on a station level and not on a confidential basis. Everyone needs access to that. We need to anonymize that data in certain ways if necessary, especially in smaller stations. But one of the few ways that they have made progress in the United States in figuring out their crime patterns is exactly using the most detailed data available. Population group, gender, age group, that's how they're figuring out what's going on in their country. So we need that on a station level very urgently. On the question of murder being social fabric crimes or otherwise, so again, largely just to reiterate what Dr. Fall said, my reading of docket analyses over the last 20 years do suggest that the proportion of murders that are related to robbery has increased. What I call instrumental murders rather than expressive murders. So that proportion has increased, but it does still seem to be a minority. But again, we can only tell that on the national level because we're only getting our docket analyses on the national level. We need that at the station level to be able to figure out, because what's happening in Rondebosch is not the same as what's happening in Philippi East, obviously. So we need that on the station level. I think most of the other points have been, two last things. So a question for StatsSA about the latest Victims of Crime Survey. Have there been any other changes in your methodology over the last 3 years? Because some of the patterns that we see in the results were really very surprising to me. For example, in vehicle theft rates, those have gone in a pattern that doesn't make sense to me. In one point you say, in the case of Mpumalanga, the jump in the reporting rate for home robbery almost doubled in the case in the course of a year. So that concerns me on the provincial level. Has there been a change in your sampling frame since 2013, in non-response rates, any of your error checking, those processes that we should be aware of? And then just a very final point, perhaps quite minor, but to the civilian secretariat that pointed out the suggestion was that we should be policing petty crimes and not letting those slip through the cracks, just to point out that on an international level, the movement is strongly away from that, to say that petty crimes should be taken off and out of the criminal justice system entirely, and that a lot of these youth at risk that need to be intervened with should not be coming into contact with a police officer. That is the very last thing that's going to be good for them. And so to, in fact, move many petty crimes into an administrative sphere and move them more towards the social work aspect rather than the police having to deal with that.
Thank you very much. We will now go to the National Commissioner. National Commissioner, there was also some questions directed to you. That's not part of the discussion today, so that can be provided later to us in writing. That's fine. And maybe the Civilian Secretariat didn't respond to my question with regard to the quarterly stats. What is the policy? What's the approach? But let's give you the first opportunity, and then we'll hear from the Secretary of Police. Yes, Honourable Market.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Under MEDA as a measure of crime stats, the very last bullet point, there were over, is it 20,000 or 200,000? Because when there was a presentation, she said 20,000.
Thank you. 20,000. Yeah, that's right. National Commissioner, over to you for responses. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Chair, maybe let me start by extending my appreciation to all the different organizations which have done the presentations. And the presentations are actually assisting SAPS to intensify the response to the crime stats. But firstly, Chair, I would like to start with a call from my own observation. There isn't a coordinated strategic approach on where we all marching together in terms of dealing with this particular analysis. And I would like to refer it to the call by former President Mandela in the preamble of the National Crime Prevention Strategy. I think he called us all together to work in a coordinated and integrated fashion in order to provide a collective response. So the first thing that I would like to propose, I've spoken to the general next to me and I've also spoken to strategic management. It will be a proposal that we convene them at another level, and if they so agree, so that then we go on to an integrated strategic approach in dealing with these particular matters. And in the turnaround vision, we have the fusion center concept, which actually speaks to not only an analysis and research database, but a coordinated one, but it also speaks to a modus operandi analysis database and as well as root cause analysis. Because one of the observations that are made here is that the stats analysis goes in isolation from your root cause analysis as well as your modus operandi analysis. It leaves them aside. That is why then the environmental design become an issue. And on each chair, I can say something interesting. The transfer of lack of confidence from the one discipline to the other. If municipality allows uncontrolled development to take place, and as a result, that area become a no-go area, there's no road, there's nothing, then crime takes place there. The police does not respond. the public lose confidence in the police. But uncontrolled development is not our mandate. And we can't tell people, move away your informal settlement from the mountain to another place. This requires a coordinated and integrated approach so that it informs the response. So I think we would like to maybe convene them and follow both the National Development Plan as well as the National Crime Prevention Strategy process. I think these analysis outcomes, they are provided in the second chair. We've just launched the community policing strategy. And your crime perception management is actually an integral part and parcel of your community policing. The one area which doesn't come out, which is our serious priority, is the prevention part. I think the bigger response on the outcome of the state is that these crimes must be prevented. If they get prevented, actually, you will even have less analysis to do. But one of my biggest reasons why I'm suggesting an integrated and coordinated approach is that we've just returned from Vienna, Chair, in Austria, and I saw ISS was there. There's quite a lot of studies that are done there about South Africa on transnational organized crime, and they include quite a lot of crimes, but it's not coordinated and structured. Therefore, if we are structured within the country, we can also be able to relate to the outside world in a coordinated, manner. And that is why we came to recommend that we should have a transnational coordinated process so that there we are also seen as a country, but if we are coordinated within. There was also... I don't have much to say on specific presentations, but if you take from civilian secretariat, the top 30 stations, you find them through the other presentations and right up to your question, Chair. The one observation I want to make in terms of the top 30 stations is that the top 30 stations have got inflated profiles. They had profiles which has been growing, whether it's unnoticed or unchallenged, up to a point where they actually outgrown the policing resources and capacity within those particular areas. But the strategy to deal with them in terms of the turnaround, we have reviewed their approach, and then all these particular top 30 stations, their resources are going to be upgraded through the migration of resources from the strategic framework right up to the local policing framework. And this is intended to be done with the approved structure of the organization. And they may, in the process, include from physical resources right up to the levels of those particular stations. So they are in the phase of the turnaround strategy. But then it becomes equally important that as all of us were putting emphasis down at the level of the station, that then we need to monitor the profile growth of those particular stations. And currently in the country we've got the two stations with the fastest growing profiles, which I think is Rustenburg in the northwest and Witbank in Mpumalanga. So if you do not monitor those profiles constantly, you're likely to get outdated. And then, Chair, specific questions that I also maybe the submission on the resources. Currently, the major variables that we're looking at in the criteria for resourcing is crime, is the crime rate, and as well as the population. But in the turnaround vision, I have instructed the review, the total review of all criteria that we're utilizing, including the review of the personnel plan. So, and since we are also becoming more and more community-based, among other things, we also want to share inputs, which may be coming from these presentations that has been done here, but through the community policing strategy and the service charter, we interact directly with the communities so that we allow their inputs in an effort to improve the criteria for strategic deployment of resources. So that particular criteria presently is under review, but all of them, they're going to be national criteria, and then they will then flow down and be captured at that particular level. Chair, it seems there was provision from your side that the questions that has been raised with subs, we can't be able to respond to them in writing, so that we will not take them individually. All the environments that are there to respond to these questions, they will generate, that is, the responses, and we will respond them as usual. And then just the last part of the strategic approach is just for me to say we need a structured, integrated approach that should speak to a national crime prevention framework. And this particular structured approach also need to link us across the borders so that we're able to link even to the UN Convention, to the continental structures, because there's other challenges within the continent. But finally, Chair, I would still like to express my appreciation to these institutions, as well as the positive manner in which they've been presenting their findings. I'm sure most of the time staff said to come here to defend themselves, and there was no need for ourselves to take a defense position, and it allows us to be strategic. Thank you.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Mr. Apia.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. I thought that question was directed to myself, the one on the regular release of crime statistics, to myself and the National Commissioner. I thought the National Commissioner will respond as the co-chair of JCPS cluster. But what I know is that there was a cabinet decision that crime statistics will be released quarterly. I think it's a matter that maybe we'll need the portfolio committee can take up with the minister. On the issue that has been raised regarding our slide on petty crime, I will ask Ms. Homer to deal with that.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, sorry, I note your point. The whole point is, maybe I wasn't clear. I'm saying let's not ignore petty offences, and I'm not saying it's a police problem, really. I'm saying let's look at how we can divert these petty offenders instead of them escalating to. So it's about de-escalation of the petty offenders, but in diversion. So,
National Commissioner, General Next Team, yes.
Yeah, thanks, sir. Maybe just to indicate that with regard to the Kodari crime stats, we did receive the approval from cabinet to continue. What we are dealing with now is the management of the diary in terms of how we would be able to present it. But not very long from here, we would be able to avail it. And also maybe as the head of secretariat is also speaking about the JCPS, that is agenda, what I would also like to add, Chair, is that most of the findings and as well as the recommendations that are coming from this analysis, they will also require us to escalate this process to the JCPS cluster so that we deal with it as a cluster approach. So we intend to take it there. Thank you.
You covered.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I would just like to add that in terms of the top 30 stations, we refrain from using the population estimates due to the reason that was expatiated by my former colleague, Mr. Iturralde, that the district population and the area that is policed by the police are not aligned. So you would have the misalignment between the district municipality population and the policing precinct. And then it was also added by the doctor here who said that, you know, the profile of this small area statistics change at a much faster rate. Like, for instance, he used the example of Marikana was not in existence in Philippi East in 2001 when the estimates were done. And now if you are just going to progressively project, you're going to miss a large portion of that particular area. Hence, we only use the population estimates only at the national and provincial level, and we only use them for only those crimes whereby the victim of the crime is a person, like in instances of murder, and we don't use them for shoplifting and other crimes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, I want to go to the final round if there's any further ones. Nothing? Yes, Anwar Karabana.
This would also be for the National Police Commissioner. The Minister, and I can't recall when he said it, perhaps when he first stepped into that position, but he did promise from his side, although he's not the operations person, you are, that visible policing would be stressed. That the police, the way he put it was, they will get out of their offices and onto the streets. We will start seeing police again. And here we are, and we're not. You just don't see the patrol vehicles. You don't see the cops on the streets patrolling. It's not what one was led to expect. Is that something you're working on? Is it going to happen? Is it going to be? Or have we really got too few police to actually perform the way, and too few reservists as well nowadays to perform the way we thought we would see the SAPS performing, i.e. in the way it was performing during the 2010 FIFA World Cup?
Thank you, members. Anything else? Thank you. That's the final input. Let's get in a final response. Is there anything from the Secretariat? You covered?
No.
Dr. Fall? Mr. Byers? Yes. Ms. Crichler?
Sorry, just one last point that I forgot to mention. On this question of whether the stats are official or not, I think it might just be worth noting that, for example, the England and Wales, the UK crime statistics lost their official status in 2014. So it's not a thing that is only a South African problem. It is a problem worldwide with whether police statistics meet the standards of official statistics. Just needed to point that out.
Thank you very much for that. General Sithole, you've got the last say from the official side.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think firstly, let me start by saying the minister was right. There's a time, Chair, when we declared the national stabilization. The order came from me, everyone out of offices and throughout the country. We actually got an acknowledgement from the public to say now they see the police. But then when we closed down on the national stabilization, we followed the geographical approach and of stabilization. And part and parcel of the geographical approach, we also receive acknowledgement on Operation Thunder, which is here in the Western Cape. And then there's Operation Buyamthetho at Gauteng. But we're targeting, that is the number of hotspots. So I'm saying in terms of seeing police in the street, it's going to be hotspot-driven, the geographical approach, Then I want to come to the third point where we came out and said these population stats vis-a-vis the current ratios in the country. We obviously far from reaching the normal average stats as prescribed by the UN, and as a result, we formulated the business case. And in terms of the business case, we intend to increase the numbers so that we can balance in terms of the average minimum requirement of the population ratio. And I'm glad that today we've been speaking about the population ratio and talking to the crime stats. So while we gradually, that is beefing that up, we are also considering beefing up the capacity of reservists. And the launch of the community in blue is also there to augment your community patrollers and all that, so that we augment the visibility. What will be coming also now with the festive season is the country in blue concept, that we're also going to use the blue lights just to flood the areas. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, honourable members, and I want to thank all the participants, Stats South Africa, Secretariat, and the relevant role players for the input. It was a very important meeting because we must, at every stage of the release of crime stats as a committee, reflect on what is it saying, is it correct, what is the quality. So we welcome that quality assurance process is ongoing, and also the partnership between SAPS and Stats SA is on a good footing, so we're looking forward to the further graduation of that process. That's very important. And also we need to take up now the indication that we're going to see quarterly stats released. That's very important, so that crime trends can be analyzed at the early level, detection can be made, and also the necessary resources be made available. So we want to thank that, and also the civil society for their input. We appreciate it very much. So we will await then the further announcements of the quarterly stats and also progress. But the important thing is there should be the necessary shifting of resources to those precincts that need assistance. That is the big message. The top 30 stations should get the necessary resources. Those that are properly resourced, that can function optimally, they must assist. Otherwise, we're not going to have the necessary impact on crime-ridden communities. So that is really part of the approach. We welcome the promise from the National Commissioner, also in terms of looking at the comprehensive approach, also involving the role players that's been here today, taking the matter forward. We can't, you know, allow a silo approach. That hasn't brought much success. So thank you very much. This meeting is closed. Thank you.
Mr. Lobby?
Ja, Nicolas, ons kon nie vir jou verder passie.
Ja, maar ek dink het is baie goeie engagement.
Ja. En die commitment.
Ja.
Maar die stats is hy dinge like redelijk op
goed. Ja, baie goed.
Thank you.
You mentioned something about the PPS strategy changes.
I haven't had a look at the strategy yet, but we will have.
Yes, will we discuss this some of the future meetings? Is it something material, or is it just sort of...
It's a new thing. It's a new strategy. Remember that it's been a strategy before.
Oh, I see. So it's just been going on and on and on.
Yeah,
and now is it better focus on partnerships?
The chair did say that
have a message should be responded to in writing.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that was one of
the difficulty is we don't get